Justifiable wars. There's a conspiracy. On a thread we got posted, feel free to do so. Well, I guess we got the streaming going now. Okay, we do. That's our fault. Forgot to push the button. Let me say that again. We got Mike in the co-pilot seat, and Stephanie's at the computer today, and she's going to keep track of all the messages from our folks on our friends on Democratic Underground. If you want to send us a note or a question, we've got something posted there, so you can send it to us, and we'd be glad to get back to you right away. So, another beautiful day in Southwest Florida, and I don't have anything to talk about today, do you?
I have nothing.
No,
nothing,
Stephanie, anything nothing. From you? No. Okay. Well, you're going to have to do all the talking today.
Thank you. Good day.
We actually do have a lot to talk about, a lot coming up. Coming up this next week, a lot's happened this past week. A whole lot going on in the political world. You know, something we don't normally do at this time of the show. We usually don't take calls yet because I've got a little something to say first. But we've got a caller on the line right now. That well, I'd really like to hear. We got Mrs. Brown in Michigan. Mrs. Brown?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
I understand you have a son in Iraq.
Yes, we have a son in Iraq, and actually he's at Fort Dix now. They're prepping him. They're going to send him to Fort Campbell, and he's on his way for a year to Iraq. He's a military, police, army reservist, weekend warrior. We gave him all the other options to get out, and he said he was going to go. So we're going to sit for a year and suffer the indignity of that. But we're going to fight, and I wanted to let you know that the State of the Union address, when that's being made, there's going to be a tremendous event occurring at the Capitol. Military families, veterans, peace activists, and others, the military family speakout.org, MFSO.org, there's going to be a candlelight vigil, 7:30 p.m. till 9:30 p.m. Tuesday, January 20th, 2004. It's going to be very powerful. They're going to carry, each person is going to be someone carrying a picture of a dead soldier, and there's over 500 now. And they're going to be pictures of dead Iraqi civilians. And as the State of the Union address is being made by President Bush, they're going to be calling out the names of each soldier who has died, and the names of the Iraqi civilians innocently died, over 6,000 of them, probably more, we're not hearing. And they'll be brought out in this march. A banner will be carried with 16 words. They're calling it a death march. It's going to be a silent vigil. And it's going to be going on right when he's making his State of the Union address. So this will be at 3rd Street Northwest between Constitution and Independence Avenues. If you're in D.C., be there. I have made a choice in my life. I'm in Michigan, you know, and a lot of people can't afford to go to D.C. You can either sit and watch the State of the Union address and drink, which is what a lot of people would have to do to watch it.
Actually, I'm going to be there.
Okay. Or,
yes.
Really?
Yes.
Or you can go out and stand on a street corner. You can get a group of people. You can go in front of a building in your town, and you can hold candles. Then you can have your own vigil. We do that every Friday in the small town we have here.
Right.
Anybody can do anything. But this will be happening. If you want more information, go to www.mfso.org. And I just wanted to let you all know that's going to be happening.
Well, I'm glad you did let us know. That's very important. And a friend of mine on the Internet, Jeff Mattson, let me know that that was going to go on, and I was going to tell you about it, but you've done a nice job yourself, and I do appreciate it. That's very, very important. You've got a year facing you now, at least, you think, until you see your son again?
Yes.
I tell you, you have our hopes and prayers that everything comes back, comes out okay with that. It's not a fun thing to do, and it's certainly just very hard on the parents as well. I know some parents that have a son over there right now, and it's a tough situation. And we sure hope the best for you.
Thank you.
We do support the troops. You know, a lot of people have made the ridiculous statement, how can you support the troops and not support the war? Well, I can support the troops because I want all these kids to come home. That's how we support them. We want them to come home and get their duty done, and whatever it is they have to do that they're made to do for their duty, and then come home safe and sound. And we support that, and God willing, that's how it will be. Thank you so much for calling. We do appreciate it.
Thank you for your show, Guy.
Yes, I guess I will mention right off the top, we are going to be in Washington, D.C. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, going there for some radio business, and also to attend a State of the Union conference that's going to last all day long, and we'll be meeting with some folks that my right-wing friends despise, Hillary Clinton and Ted Kennedy and Joe Biden and Carl Levin, Senator Harry Reid from Nevada. The list goes on and on and on. John Podesta is going to talk to us at noontime at lunch, and going to have dinner with, Tom Daschle and Nancy Pelosi. And it's going to be going to have it in the Senate caucus room, a very historic room. That's where, for those of you who don't know that watched it on TV, that's where the McCarthy hearings took place. There's some other notables, too. But interesting, I was there last year, and I'll just take a moment to digress and let you know what that was all about. Went to this conference last year, and it was good. I don't know how much we got accomplished over the year about the radio.
I was just going to ask about that.
Yeah, we've got one guy on the radio nationally now. But
woohoo!
We didn't accomplish a whole lot, but hopefully we'll get some more done this time. We're going to talk about that long and hard while we're there. But we ended up having dinner at the Capitol building, right adjacent to the House chamber. And that was fun, and it was exciting and very interesting and all. And I went up and watched the State of the Union speech, which uttered those 16 famous words and lied, and then lied some more to the public and misled the public. But I digress. And so afterwards, I wanted to leave and go back to my hotel, which was just 3 or 4 blocks away, and I was going to walk. And I tried to get out of the Capitol building, but they wouldn't let you out. They had the place locked down. And nobody was in or out while Bush was in the chamber. So once he left, they let us out, and I walked around the sidewalk that swings around the side of the House side of the Capitol building, and there was literally a military person with a flak jacket and an automatic rifle behind every tree. There were at least 24 helicopters flying over above, just everywhere throughout all down the mall. All up through there was a demonstration going on, although you couldn't hear it from the Capitol. They kept them far enough away.
Did Clinton have that kind of security? Or any other president have that kind of security?
Certainly not. No. Certainly not. You would have thought that the Iraq army was going to invade, that they were waiting down on K Street.
That's a lie they didn't tell.
And they had all the city buses that they could round up, parked nose to tail, so no one could get through, and they had the place around it. It was an armed camp. I had never seen anything quite like it, but it was interesting. And even back at my hotel for an hour or so, I went back and watched in the military helicopters and stuff, just thick. And, of course, as always is the case, they had probably 1,000 cops watching 1,000 demonstrators.
Or 5,000 cops watching 1,000
demonstrators.
Yeah,
that was probably more like it. And the helicopters kept flying over them to intimidate them. And it was quite a scene. Though I suspect there will be more of the same this year. And I think this candlelight vigil will be a nice thing. These folks, it's a remembrance not only of our 500 dead, but of the 9,000 civilian Iraqis that died in this unnecessary war as well. And so
I think that's what people forget about. Like,
yes.
You know, our first caller says, you know, and some right-wing type might be like, well, you know, he joined up for the National Guard. You know, tough deal. You join up, you know you might be sent somewhere. Yeah, that is true. But what makes this so bad and what makes everybody so angry about it and what makes everybody do these vigils and whatnot is because it was done under false pretenses. It was a war started on lies.
Absolutely.
And for not for the reasons given to us, and for all the wrong reasons. And that's why everybody's so opposed to it.
You go to war when it's necessary, not when it's a choice. And we had a choice. We had a clear choice. And this past week, it became very evident that there was never any doubt about this war from January the 20th, 2000, there was never any doubt that there was going to be this war. No doubt whatsoever.
But we knew that anyway. I know it didn't get a lot of press play during the election. I wonder why it didn't, because I had the feeling that if Bush were to win, we'd end up invading Iraq regardless, and that was well before 9/11 or the World Trade Center attacks. It should surprise no one. If they hadn't happened, he probably still would have done it.
I was naive. I didn't think they'd really have the guts to do it so blatantly and lie. I thought maybe, you know, they'd be men and stand up and before the American public and say, now look, the man tried to assassinate my father, and that's bad, and he's a bad guy, and he's killing his folks over there and all. We're going to go get him. You see, if there were men, that's what they would stand up and say in front of the American public and then leave it to the public. What should we do? But they're
I never had that feeling that they'd be men or be honest about it. I never figured they would.
I could hope, but
I have no hope for them.
I've lost all that hope since that time. Hey, we're going to have an interesting show today. We're going to have gentleman a lot of you know on a little later. Mr. Gentleman wrote a book called Conspirators. Al Martin's going to be on along about 4:05. I think he's going to be with us today, and he's got some updates to tell us about the Bush folks. Al always
he was some, very good last time.
Yeah.
Eye-opening.
Al always has a lot to say, and we've got some questions to ask him as well. A little controversy about him.
Why not?
Yeah, so we'll ask him that. And today, you know, I had planned on talking about politics, of course, and the Republican Party. And I am really tired of hearing a lot of you, and you know who you are. Some of you I know doggone well are listening, and some of my friends I know about this have emailed, many of you have emailed about this, who seem to have it in their head that we are not going to and cannot win this next election. And I think that's absurd. I really do. It's easy to take a hangdog attitude and say, oh, gee, we don't have a chance. And by the way, let me give the phone numbers here. 888-602-7500. 888-602-7500 or 7501, 7502, 7503, or 7504. You got that? 888-602-7500. 7501, 02, 03, or 04. We're going to take a break right now, and we're going to regroup, I guess, and get our act together here. We got
it
together today, don't you?
It's already together. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back after this. Stay tuned now. You're listening to The Guy James Show.
As a child, she's kidnapped by another tribe. Later, she's won in a game by a traitor. She's just 14 when, in the brutal winter of 1804, she has a son. A son she'll carry some 7,000 miles on a journey no man has ever made, with Lewis, Clark, and the Corps of Discovery. This alone is enough to make Sacagawea a hero. But there's more. She pulls her weight. She shares her knowledge. She speaks her mind. Sacagawea is known for her role as a cultural translator, but she was much more, because as William Clark noted, a woman and a mother with a party of men is a symbol of peace. What can we learn from a 200-year-old story? Walk with Lewis and Clark at lewisandclark200.org and see what you discover. Because their trail winds through us all.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ad Council.
Orthopedic surgeons are perfecting a promising new procedure that could end some tragic mistakes in the operating room. It's called Sign Your Site, and it calls for surgeons to sign their initials directly on the patient in the correct spot where the surgery needs to happen while the patient watches. Some might say signing your site is being overly cautious. We say when it comes to surgery, there's no such thing. For more on patient safety, visit AAOS.org. A public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
If you have diabetes, you already know you could develop kidney failure, lose a limb, or go blind. But did you know that 2 out of 3 people with diabetes actually die from heart disease or stroke? Lower your risk of heart disease and stroke by lowering your blood sugar, blood pressure, and cholesterol. Ask your doctor to tell you more about the link between diabetes and heart disease, or call 1-800-DIABETES. A message from the American Diabetes Association and the American College of Cardiology.
And now, back to the nation's number one Democratic talk show host, Guy James.
Ah, yes. We're back, and we've got a great show for you today. We really do. We've got lots of interesting things to talk about. We always feign like we don't, but we do.
We make things up, yes.
And in a few minutes after I talk to a gentleman, I think we're getting on the phone right now, after we do that.
There's a news flash.
There's a news flash that, I tell you, don't worry. The world's not coming to an end or nothing like that.
Democracy has, though.
But it concerns Mr. Cheney, and I got to tell you, reading this, I'll read this in just a couple of minutes. It makes me sick. It really does.
Well, I just had to run down to the restroom.
It's going to make some of you sick too when we do it. Hey, we've got CJ Zia on the phone right now. CJ, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh,
good,
so good to have you with us. Hey, a lot of our listeners right here, especially north of us, know all about you, but some folks in our area don't. CJ, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're up to right now. Well, I know, but they don't.
Well, I'm an attorney, and I'm running for Congress, something I've been very active politically, and I know down in Lee County, in that part of the area, I've been very active in the last 2 years ago. I was a candidate for state senate back then, very active politically. What we've done this time is we're running for Congress. We have a poll. We've gone through the Washington people, and we've polled and checked this candidacy against Catherine Harris in District 13. And lo and behold, we have great news. You know, she only scores 37% of the likely voters in our district think that they will vote to reelect her. And when we poll ourselves against her head to head with a simulation of informed electorate, and we do this, I actually defeat her 45-43%. So we have a very legitimate opportunity here. We're going to win this, and we're in a race that's we're really focused, because now we know what she's going to do. So we're going to go about our job of defeating her.
Oh, CJ, that's the best poll numbers I've heard in a long time. That's exciting. I mean, I tell you, that's really exciting.
Well, it's clear that her own party doesn't want her to run for Senate. She would be it behoove herself to run for Senate, just based on the polling data that we've looked at, but they don't want to run for United States Senate. They want to keep her in some place. And, the funny thing is that she just acts like she's owed something, and she's forgotten that her constituents have elected her to represent them, and she has forgotten that. I really believe we have a great opportunity here. We are going to defeat her.
CJ, she is owed something, but not by the electorate.
Absolutely, exactly. And, she has said that numerous times, that she makes her decisions based on what the White House tells her to do, and that's not representative government. We don't have, the great thing of our nation that makes us a difference between any other country in the world is our checks and balances, that independent judiciary, the idea that our Congress is going to monitor what the executive branch is going to do, and she's just failed in that respect.
Now, I'm so glad to hear those numbers. What's your congressional district?
It's 13.
13.
And we're Manatee, Sarasota, Hardy, and DeSoto counties.
All right.
Most of that, anyway.
We got Mike right here. Mike, you're in that district, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you're gonna help out on that deal.
How badly gerrymandered is that district, out of curiosity?
Quite a bit. Actually, I live in my home residence in Palmetto, Florida, which About 30,000 people in Manatee and Sarasota have been gerrymandered out to vote for Congressman Davis, which is the east side, more Democratic side. So there's a big slice cut out that votes in the Tampa Bay area. If you know Lee County, I don't think there's a state senator from Lee County anywhere. You know, the way they've gerrymandered this whole thing, it is very depressing.
Even The Economist pointed that out about a year and a half ago. A fairly conservative news magazine pointed out that Florida and Ohio, the last time around, were the worst they'd seen in ages, although Texas, I think, is probably left ahead.
And we do have a state senator here. You know Dave Ehrenberg.
Sure, I know Dave.
And you know Dave, and Dave.
From Palm Beach.
Yeah, from you folks that don't know, yeah, tell them about that, CJ.
Yeah, the way they've done, you know, but you know, there's a lot of deals that go on. I think that happen here, and unfortunately, actually, I am very excited about the Democratic Party. We have new leadership statewide. We have a new mission. People in our area, and I think even in down in your area, they're becoming registering more as Dems.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of closet Democrats too. I hate to say, or rhinos, and we have to get them back in the party working for, you know, truth and righteousness and what's, you know, the difference between Republicans and Democrats. I think it comes down to two basic things. One of the reasons I'm a Democrat is because I just believe in the Supreme Court. We need to have Supreme Court justices that understand what civil rights are about, what individual rights are about, and you need to have a president that can appoint the right kind of person. The second reason is, and I equate it to, you know, back in maybe the 1930s and the Depression, for the first time what happened, FDR and the Dems created those programs like the WPA, the CCCA, those they call relief, you know, and it was getting people jobs. And for the first time, people felt they weren't alone. For the first time, you know, they felt there was somebody there for them. It was the beginning, I think, where a government made themselves, a moral contract between government and people.
Where we actually became a modern nation state,
absolutely.
Basically.
I mean, you know, our work ethic, our belief in America is that if you work your tail off, you're going to become something. And reality is that's often true, and we want to work hard, but sometimes we need help. You know, I'm an attorney. I have a big practice. I have a lot of employees. What I learned a long time ago is that if you invest in your business, if you invest in your people, things will go well. Well, I think government is the same way. If you invest in the people, meaning great education, great opportunities, and for seniors in particular, that they understand that these folks that have built this nation ought to be guaranteed, you know, that when they get to that golden years, that they're going to have medical treatment, they're going to have lower cost prescription drugs. There is a moral contract between government and people. The Republicans say, well, if you're not good enough, you're not going to hack it, tough luck. You know, you may have done everything correctly. You may have worked hard. You may have saved your money. You might have done everything you needed in your life. They don't care.
It's also practical, too. It's also practical. I mean, when the elderly get ill and there's nothing, no safety net for them with medication or hospitalization, they get sick. I mean, it kills their working families. It kills their children. I mean, it wipes them out financially.
Absolutely. I mean, there was a great, I think, Move On commercial where they show a bunch of seniors and then they show some Bush pulling the rug out from under them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problem with politics today is the spin and lies, and they're just, will say, you know, it's like Bush says, mission accomplished, and heck, hey, we're no way near accomplished, you know. It's no child left behind. In fact, they haven't even funded the program. It's now we want to talk about immigration. Now we want to talk, and we, you know, this prescription, the Medicare bill, which is crazy, in 2006 it starts. We can't even judge it. Now they can go around saying, you know, we've corrected Medicare. I equate it to whitewashing. You know, I heard this minister once said that, you know, you can take this whitewash and you can cover this building, but when the first rains of truth come down, the whitewash, you know, comes off. And that's what Bush is about. They're just going to say what they need to during the election time and hope that's good enough to steal an election back or take an election as they did last time. But we have a great, 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 great opportunity here. I know that we can defeat Catherine Harris. We need to, if we have the message, we need to raise the money. If we do that, we're going to succeed. I can guarantee that. And I just want to tell the listeners, if they want to check cjforcongress.com, cjforcongress.com, they can check out our initial website here. But you're going to hear a lot more about us because we are going full bore. And you know, her arrogance and the fact that she just thinks everything is owed to her. I'm just very upset about that. And I think we need representatives that are going to be concerned about people. You know, not just the rhetoric of I'm for veterans, and then reality they cut veteran programs. You know, we're going to do what's necessary.
Well, CJ, I know, and I've heard and talked to many Democratic leaders around the state. I know everybody's rallying behind you.
I appreciate it.
And we certainly are, and anything we can do to help, we certainly will. I met CJ at our, he was magnanimous enough to come down to our big rally we had down at Bonita Springs not long ago. And
it's exciting because I've seen the changes down in Lee County and South Collier County as far as Dems getting involved. You know, I think it's clear that when we see the lies and distortions of truth, and when we understand what is at stake here for this presidency, for the United States Senate in Florida, you know, not that Graham's retiring, and for the congressional seats, that we need to get energized. I am proud of being a Democrat, and I'm a converted Democrat. I want to make that clear, too, because, and you know what they say about people who find religion and become converts, they're more religious. Well, I'm more Democrat than I think average Democrat, because I really believe in the change of what's going on. I believe in our party. And I'm committed for my life to make things happen. And that's why I'm an attorney. That's why I'm an activist. That's why I'm an Eagle Scout. That's why I've always been. And, you know, you people like yourselves, and we get involved for a reason. We want to make our community better, our nation better. And sooner or later, we will succeed. And I know in this particular seat, we can achieve victory if we all get out and vote, if we all do what we need to do our part. Nothing happens unless we do our part, each and every one of us. And be, if you live in Bonita Springs or in Fort Myers or where across Southwest Florida, we can make a difference in our community, and we just need to get Dems out, and we need to find candidates and say, hey, we are viable, we can achieve this. And we know we can, because this isn't pie in the sky. This is the scientific research that says we can defeat Republicans in this area.
Well, we've got a good candidate against Catherine Harris. That's a fact.
I do appreciate it.
And CJ, anything we can do to help, let us know. We're behind you. We will do what we can to help your campaign along. And the best of luck to you. And I can't tell you how much we want you to beat Catherine Harris.
Oh, please do it. Please, please, please.
It's an honor, and thank you for having me on the show. And keep this great journalistic endeavor going, because the truth is important, and somebody has to be speaking what they think and telling it like it is, and I know you guys are doing your part.
All that's left is the truth. That's our motto on
the
show.
There you go. You know, that's all I look for, and, you know, we just need to seek the truth, look for the truth, and, you know, good things will happen, and keep it going, guys. Thank you.
Thanks so much, CJ.
Bye-bye.
I tell you, there's a fabulous guy. You get him up on the stump and hear him speak. He's a spellbinding.
He sounds very very articulate. It sounds like he has a great chance. I hope he brings up purged voters.
Yeah.
I'm sure he will.
He's a very savvy guy. He's, as you can tell, highly intelligent, very well spoken, good looking guy. He's got the whole thing going for him.
Okay.
And I tell you, to beat Catherine Harris,
she feels she's entitled.
Yes, she certainly does. Well, She is owed.
Oh, she's
owed. The White House owes her, and they've already paid her off. They'd like to pay her a little more. Hey, we've got another caller on the line. We got Mike in Naples. Mike, welcome to the program.
No, thank you, guys. Be here. Listen, you made a statement earlier to pique my interest.
You're breaking up on us, Mike. You on a cell phone?
Is that better?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, all right. Well, you made a statement earlier that kind of piqued my interest where you said you go to war when it's necessary, not when it's a choice. And I'm wondering, could you give me an example of a war that was not a factor of choice?
Well, I think the Second World War, it was necessary to go there to save Europe. I think the First World War, it was necessary.
A little more questionable, perhaps.
I don't think Vietnam was necessary at all. You know, maybe the first Gulf War was necessary to put Mr. Hussein back across the border.
Well, I didn't ask you to give me an example of a war you thought was necessary. I asked you to give me an example of a war you thought was not a factor of choice. Your statement was you go to war when it's necessary, not when it's a choice.
I'm afraid I'm not following you.
All wars are a factor of choice. Options over decision. You may not agree of the necessity that those options are based upon.
Well, you go to war when you're threatened. You go to war when you know it's of the national interest. It's imperative to the national interest. That's when you go to war.
Well, Well, don't you think that 9/11 kind of stimulated a national interest?
Certainly not. Certainly not for as far as going to war. Going to war against the Al Qaeda, yes. Going to war against Saddam Hussein, absolutely not.
There's no connection. Never been any connection. And the White House has said they've alluded that there's a connection, but every time they're asked point blank, they always say there's no connection. We found no connection between Saddam Hussein's Ba'athist government in Iraq and Al Qaeda before or after 9/11. So, I mean, what's your connection here? You're drawing like from one line to two dots with a line zigzagging all over the place.
All right. May I speak?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
9/11 initiated a shift in paradigm where the entire assessment of rational international players had to be reconsidered. At that point in time, we gave Saddam Hussein the option of bringing his weapons of mass destruction account forward. If he did that, all would be forgiven. He refused. At that point in time, we gave him another option. This is above and beyond the 12 years.
But still, despite his options, what threat was he to us?
He was not rational as the leader of a nation state. Thus, he was a threat. By taking his option away from him, we reduced the potential for an untimely necessity, using your definition of necessity.
So any time now, from the rationale would be there, any time that we determine that someone might be a threat, we should go after them.
Anytime I determine that I think someone is a threat to me or my family, I am sure going after them.
Well,
what would you tell me would be the rationale that I should not go after somebody that I perceive as a threat?
Well, you're not running the country, I'm afraid. You know, we collectively here are going to decide what's the public's involved in this as well. Our Congress is involved in this as well. Bush didn't make the case. The case he made was not true. They were not a threat to this country. They were not.
The case that Bush made is the case that all presidents of the United States make. Our national sovereign right to defend ourselves is an extension of each of our individual rights to self-defense. Saddam Hussein was an irrational international player.
He made the case that they were a threat to us, and they weren't a threat to us.
He made the case that they could very well be a threat to us, and we should deal with that potential threat now as opposed to waiting for it when it may come along at a time when we can't afford.
We're talking in circles here, Mike. He was wrong.
The circle is yours.
No, he was wrong. The people in his administration now know that there was no connection between Saddam Hussein and Al Qaeda, and there was no threat. This was a toothless tiger we went after.
That's absolutely false, Guy. You can go to Bill Gertz on any of a number of his books where he's.
Who is Bill Gertz?
Stated. He's an intelligence reporter for the Washington Post.
Then he knows where the weapons of mass destruction are, probably.
Well, pardon me, it's the Washington Times.
Oh, the Times.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, the Mooney, the Mooney paper.
Okay, so dismiss that, and then you go ahead and tell me all about your sources over there.
No, I'm not going to quote any sources. I just want to know where the weapons are.
Well, our own government said they can't find them, huh?
And they gave up
looking. Okay, well, I'll tell you this. I have buried in Collier County a 2-pound can of Gatorade. Now, let's assume that that's anthrax, and you go out and find it for me.
Oh, so you're gonna hang on to the hope that they're there, then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna hang on to the fact that they were there.
Why did they send David Kay and his whole outfit home? Why did they come home and stop looking?
Why did they stop looking?
Saddam Hussein and the Ba'ath Socialist Party are no longer in a position to take any chemical weapons that may or may not be there and do anything with them. That would be a fairly good reason.
Nobody in that entire region was threatened by him. There was nobody in that whole area. The Turks weren't worried about him.
Saudi Arabia wasn't worried about him.
He never launched all kinds of Scud missiles into Israel. He wasn't paying Hamas to blow up civilians. No, he was no threat to anybody.
Look it up. Israel downgraded him from a top threat to a low-grade threat. I mean, that's
exactly
a fact.
Right. Israel was not a threat at all now.
You don't believe in facts, do you? You don't care about him, do you?
You're just giving us anecdotal information. Yeah. I'm telling you.
No, as opposed to the empirical fact that you give me.
No. Here is a fact, Mike.
Give me
here's a fact, and if you can't accept it, then this conversation is over. They have not found any weapons of mass destruction, and Mr. Bush said that is why we went to war initially. That's why he said.
Mr. Bush said we were going to war because Saddam Hussein refused to bring his account forward. He refused to say, A, where they were destroyed, and B, here are the guys that destroyed them, and here's the evidence that I have that these guys destroyed those weapons at these locations.
And the UN inspectors never found any and were doing their job. And
well,
it wasn't.
I mean, just simply
and now we find out.
Was
no, Mike, listen to me. The whole basis for your conversation here, what you brought up 9/11 to start out. We now know, we suspected all along, but we now know from Mr. O'Neill and others as well, that this was from day one, from January the 20th, 2000. This was
back to 1998.
This was the Bush
Clinton
agenda.
Was lying about it too. How about that? Yeah.
Position that we were going to seek regime change in Iraq.
So and Clinton was full of it, too. Yeah. Right? You can't handle that, can
if,
you?
If Clinton was wrong, Clinton was wrong. He was wrong.
He was wrong about a lot of things. If he was wrong about this, then he was wrong. The fact is Saddam Hussein is the individual who said, I have the weapons, and he is also on record as having used the weapons, and that is the reason that we went in, because he refused to come clean on his
No, Mike, you know Bush has come up with about four reasons now why we went in. We're going to have to move on. We've got
all
other
right,
people.
Well, you lost again. That's 22.
No, I'm sorry. If no weapons, no argument, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
No weapons, no argument. That's how it is. If you don't come up with the weapons, you're dead in the water. There's
that was their reason.
There's nobody that would accept anything but that.
How many times do we have to get Colin Powell's voice and Connie Rice's voice and repeat it to you over their own words over and over and over again that they're a threat? Donald Rumsfeld saying, we know where the weapons are. We know where they are. They're in Fallujah and whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, they're full of crap. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, we've got John in Fort Myers. John, welcome.
Well, good afternoon. You know, these folks that are like this last fellow, I wonder why he thinks we supported Saddam back when he first came into power. We've seen videos of Rumsfeld shaking hands,
mm-hmm.
selling him weapons. If he was such a SOB today, why wasn't he an SOB then? And he was, because I've seen those videos where he was calling up people out of his legislature, whatever they call it out there, called their names up, marched them outside, shot them.
Yeah, he's a bad guy. He's a bad guy. No,
he
no
was
doubt.
A bad guy then.
And we did business with him full well, knowing that he'd gassed people. We did business with him. He was good enough.
Not just the U.S., but the same people.
Yep.
Rumsfeld, Cheney.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't know what difference it makes who we elect president. If Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and all these guys have been there 20 years, if they're still going to be there.
Yeah.
These bureaucrats are going to be there. Now, I just saw, I think, 60 Minutes a couple weeks ago. Rumsfeld was over in Turkmenistan 3 months ago, shaking hands with another tyrannical leader like Saddam Hussein, selling him weapons. And why? Oil.
Absolutely.
Now, I heard interviews with scientists who escaped Iraq during the Gulf War, and they said that they would lie to Saddam about the developments they were making in weapons, because if they didn't, they would be tortured. And this man had been tortured for 6 months because they just weren't making enough progress.
That's a heck of a work program. You create them or die.
No, hey, you guys, how's that nuclear program doing?
Great,
oh, real
great,
good, boss. Yeah. Real good. Yeah, oh, yeah. We're pretty close, boss.
Our intelligence people believe the same lies they were telling to Saddam, and this is why we went to war. The last thing, and I saw it, I think, today on the History Channel, regarding our Air Force and the bombing in Iraq. And it's interesting how the news is manipulated. You remember when the news reported they found some bombers buried out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The fellas that were flying these planes and bombing, the guy said, well, they didn't take off, they didn't fly out, so we bombed their planes in the hangars on the grounds. And then he said they started burying them in the ground, and we went after them there. So that news report was not new news. Our guys knew that they were burying planes, and they were blowing them up as fast as they could.
Oh, yeah.
Missed a few here.
Yeah.
We're manipulated so much by the media, and it's interesting. But he was an SOB before. Why would this country support that?
Well, you know, John, you know,
amoral foreign policy.
It's come down to being winners and losers here, and nobody likes being a loser. And our last caller, and many folks like him. It's not, I don't want to pick him out all by himself.
Why not?
That no matter what happens with this administration, they're going to back him until they go completely down the tubes. They would follow this guy into hell if necessary before they would admit that he was wrong.
And may I mention that Neil Borch brought this up, and I don't know who he supports, but Bush went to Atlanta to fundraise,
yeah.
And the taxpayers paid for it because he went there to put a wreath on Martin Luther King's tomb. Now, when Clinton would do something like that, it was the worst thing in the world.
Oh, yeah.
But AR guy's doing it, it's okay.
Yeah, well, that's that left-wing press for you.
There you go. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, John.
Liberal press.
Yeah. We've got Diane on the line right now from Fort Myers. Diane, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, and happy Saturday to you.
Yes.
I'm calling because of Mike's call. I think he's from Naples, the guy before the last caller. Don't blame him. It's not his fault. It is what is going on with the press nowadays, with the media, with talk show radio. People are not getting the truth. And they hear it on the radio. They hear it on TV. They're being fed propaganda, and the people believe it. It's the same thing that took place when Adolf Hitler was coming into rise in power back over in Germany. Everyone just believed everything that they heard. No, you get to a point in a society, and we're there now in this country, and it is very bothersome to me, because you get to the point where you honestly believe everything you hear, and you get in this lull where you question nothing. And it's the same as last week when I called you, telling you to question about the World Trade Center towers. You did not want to believe me, but also you have not questioned it. You know, and I see this in all of America right now, and in all Americans. They don't want to hear, they don't want to question anything. They just want to take it like blind sheep. And if it's on Dan Rather at night or Tom Brokaw or if Sam Donaldson said it on the radio or you, they just follow it and believe it, never wanting to check out facts. Because what I told you about Prescott Bush backing Adolf Hitler coming into power, that is historically
true. We know that. We know that. We've talked about that several times on this show.
That's a fact. There's no doubt about it.
Like right now, Jeb Bush just flew down sneakingly, very quietly, flew down and went to Guatemala and Costa Rica. Well, George, his brother, was down in Mexico. And not one media person has come out and questioned what were they doing down there and what is the real deal with Fox. It has to do with the drug cartel, because they've been drug dealers for years. And not one media person has ever checked it. Not one media person has even questioned it. It just goes on silently. That's why they cannot seal up our borders, because then they would not get their dope in.
I'll fly down there tomorrow, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to sniff out the dealings of Jeb. I agree with you that we've facilitated a lot of this, you know, fake drug war, and I know we've allowed certain things in this country. It happens. I agree with you.
I wish every American would read the book Fleshing Out Skull and Bones by Chris Milligan by Trine Day Publishing, because it has got actual facts in there. It's got the paperwork from the American Archives. You know, the National Archives, historical papers in there. Everything is in there, and it is actually proven and documented. It's not your black ops theories.
Well,
it's
okay,
actual
Dan,
facts.
Sorry, Dan. We have other callers. But thank you for the book suggestion.
Yeah, thanks,
right,
Diane.
Thank you.
We got Ryan in Cape Coral. Ryan, welcome to the program. Are you there, Ryan?
I wanted to address that one caller who was defending the administration about going into Iraq. The fact of the matter is, and it's very simple, Bush lied, the troops died, and when you look at our deficit because of all these actions and all the other careless policies of this administration, the country is fried in a lot of ways if you look at it, with the massive deficit and the infrastructure crumbling from within like it is. And, you know, if these right-wing neocons, if they really had any guts about them, they'd go after someone who could fight back, not picking on weak countries that can't fight back, not weak countries that never done us anything, and all the time making excuses for this president, by the way, who was a deserter during the Vietnam War because his father got him in the National Guard. He deserted, never shown up. No one else could have got away with that, let me tell you. But
he took off for a year, let's just
say. Yeah, right.
People that haven't heard that.
Oh, yes, okay. Well, you know, anyway, no one's ever mentioned in the news media if that was Gore or any Democrat or Clinton. It would be all over the place. But it really does irk me that you hear these, you know, it's the same kind of propaganda that, you know, they're buying this propaganda. It's like anything the administration puts out. And there were no weapons of mass destruction. And instead of addressing that, they go on, oh, well, we want democracy in Iraq. Well, what about democracy in all the other Mideast? You know, isn't the Bush family very, very close with Saudi Arabia? They're no kind of democracy. I mean, they're how many people did they execute last year?
Well, I think the mullahs are over there right now, and the ayatollahs are showing us just how anxious they are to have our democracy.
Oh, yeah, the Shia are 60% of Iraq's population.
They can't wait.
They will win every election in that country.
I don't know. We're not going to shove that down anybody's throat, I don't think. I just don't think anybody's going to.
No. That's right, and the news media never holds this administration accountable for anything.
No, they don't.
There were no weapons of mass destruction. And another thing, you know, and I've seen the same thing since Reagan. You know, Reagan, when he got into trouble, when we lost all those troops over in Lebanon, they were sitting ducks, right away we had to go into Grenada. And, you know, all these right-wing neocons jumping up and down, we're tough, we're getting tough again, and all this other stuff. Well, that's like an adult kicking a baby. I mean, they only went into Iraq for one thing, and that was for greed and glory. And you can see Cheney and Halliburton and Brown and Root and all these other people laughing all the way to the bank. And, you know, the people that want to sit back and make excuses for them, I mean, it's frightening.
Well, Ryan, we have to pause for a break right now. Ryan, thanks very much for your call.
You're very welcome.
I am totally convinced that that Mike from Naples and certain other people I know who are so enamored with George Bush, you could sit them down in a room and have George W. Bush himself walk in the room and say, Mike, let me tell you why I started this war.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you I was wrong and I lied to you, and they wouldn't believe it.
And I don't think they're bad people.
No, not at all.
Well,
not
at all. Mind.
Well, hey, we're going to stop for a break right now. We went a little long, but we wanted to get your calls in. You can call us at 888-602-7500, 888-602-7500, 7501, 02, 03, or 04. You're listening to The Guy James Show. We'll be right back.
Restoring the liberal media, The Guy James Show.
Hello?
Yes?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. I'm calling about the vacancy.
Yeah, it's a small room. $300.
No. I don't want a room. I want a colon.
Huh?
What do you got, biscuits in your ears? I said I'm looking for a colon.
Come again?
I'm a polyp. A big red colon polyp, and I want to move into a colon.
You what?
I'm looking for a colon. Can't you hear me? Maybe I should talk louder.
Nobody should live with a colon polyp. They can lead to colon cancer, and you can have one and not even know it. But remove the polyp early and stop colon cancer before it even starts. Just ask your doctor for a test. It's that simple. Get the test, get the polyp, get the cure.
I don't have time for this.
Come on, everybody wins here. I get a colon and you get a pal. Work with me.
Don't need no friends, goodbye.
I need housing.
For more information, call 1-800-ACS-2345 or go to cancer.org. Brought to you by the American Cancer Society and the Ad Council.
All over America, people are taking the national radon test. Have you? Answer true or false. Radon is a radioactive gas. True.
I didn't know that, no.
True or false? The Office of the Surgeon General recommends that all homes be tested for radon. True, your home should be tested. True or false, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. True.
I'm going to dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
His first months were supposed to be at home. His first years, not such a worry. It's no one's fault. We did everything right. But still, our son was born 3 months premature, and no one knows why.
More than 460,000 babies are born premature each year, nearly half for unknown reasons. Please support March of Dimes research. Visit marchofdimes.com or call 1-888-966-3222.
I just wish someone could tell me why.
Premature birth. The answers can't come soon enough.
heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Back with you. Guy James here. Mike sitting over there. We got Stephanie at the controls. We can lower that music. I guess not. Okay, there we go. We got about 5 minutes till the top of the hour, and I want to tell you about something here that sickens me.
Newsflash, yes.
Absolutely sickens me. And for all you Republicans listening, did you think these people are right and fair and just? I want you to listen to what I'm about to tell you here. I want you to listen to this, and then I want you to tell me if you think these people in office right now deserve to be in office, if they're decent enough human beings to deserve the trust of the American people. I think not. Cheney hunting trip with Scalia raises impartiality questions. The Los Angeles Times today reported Dick Cheney and Supreme Court Justice Anton Scalia spent part of last week duck hunting together at a private camp in South Louisiana just 3 weeks. Listen to this. This is the important part. Just 3 weeks after the high court agreed to take up the vice president's appeal involving lawsuits over his handling of the administration's energy task force. While Scalia and Cheney are avid hunters and longtime friends, several experts in legal ethics question the timing of their trip. Several, I would think every American would be outraged by this. Here's a man that's going to rule on an appeal by the vice president over his lousy secret energy meeting, and they're duck hunting together? For God's sake, what are they thinking?
You know what they're thinking? They can do whatever they want.
You betcha.
And they're not trying to be secret about it. They're
you
just
betcha.
Telling it, you know, here it is, stuff it.
Now, if Scalia disqualifies himself for this, then that might be another matter. But you know he won't. You know he won't. And here he... I can't believe this.
Here's a question. Back during election 2000, or selection 2000, what did he vote when they were...
Oh, Mr. Scalia?
Yeah, what did
oh,
he vote?
Let me see. Could it be he was number 5?
Yeah, I think so.
He says, I do not think my impartiality could reasonably be questioned. Oh, my God.
He's insane, okay? Anybody can question anything, right?
I do not think my impartiality could reasonably be questioned. Oh, man. For nearly 3 years, the L.A. Times goes on to say, Cheney has been fighting demands that he reveal whether he met with energy industry officials, including then Enron chairman Kenny Boyle, when he was formulating the president's energy policy. They've been trying to get the truth out of that ever since, and it goes to court.
Just prior to California getting raked over the coals for billions of dollars.
Yeah. And,
by those same people.
Absolutely the same people. And so here we've got Anton Scalia. Impartial, of course. I can see it now.
I'm thinking Pelican Brief. I'm sorry.
They're sitting in the duck blind, and Cheney says to Anton, Anton, what do you think about this case coming up? And Anton says, oh, Dick, we can't talk about that.
Hang on for a second.
Yeah, and shoot a duck or two.
No,
we can't talk about that. It wouldn't be right.
Yeah.
That's
what
he
right.
said back to Cheney. He says, oh, well, of course, sir. You're right. Excuse me for asking. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right.
These people, as I've said before, are a bunch of thieves. They're a bunch of liars. This is the worst administration this nation has ever had. With mark my word, before it's all over, they will go down in history as the most corrupt administration there has ever been. They will be the benchmark against which every administration from now on is judged as to whether they're... It used to be Nixon, were they as corrupt as Nixon.
Yeah.
Now it'll be are they corrupt as George W. Bush's administration. This is...
Has a Supreme Court justice ever been hauled off the bench in cuffs, handcuffs?
I'd love to see it.
No, that would be nice, I think.
Then they'd have to appeal it to the Supreme Court, wouldn't they?
No
eventually,
irony. Yeah, okay.
No irony
yeah,
of that at all.
That would be difficult to deal with.
I tell you, it is criminal, and it raises impartiality questions. Come on.
And Sandra Day O'Connor.
These people know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. Impartiality, my... Okay, well, we're going to break for news right now. You're listening to The Guy James Show. We'll be right back after a few words. Hey, James.
Thank you. Justifiable wars. It's a conspiracy. were manufactured in 1983, and that this proved the Bush-Cheney regime's allegations that Iraq had had such weapons for 20 years or more. On Wednesday night, BBC, in its late-night American edition through its Lionheart Productions subsidiary in Washington, reran the piece, reminding all of its listeners that, in fact, the only nation to have sold Iraq chemical and or biological weapon systems in 1983 was the United States. And that, in fact, after Saddam Hussein, as you may remember, used one of these said anthrax weapons on a village full of Iraqi Kurds, killing 5,000 of them in 4 hours, then Reagan Bush special envoy Donald Rumsfeld traveled to Iraq and met with Saddam Hussein 4 days after the incident to collect the data on the attack that the Hussein regime had promised to give to our Department of Defense and to offer to sell the Hussein regime still more American chemical and or biological weapons. When the BBC ran that piece, the allegations being made by the White House quickly disappeared, and the piece that had originally been run on Fox, MSNBC, and CNN was not run a second time. On Thursday, the following day, the administration then claimed that it had recovered Iraqi state documents from the Saddam Hussein regime in a recent, quote, find, close quote, showing some of these documents on the Fox, MSNBC, and CNN pieces as being genuine on Iraqi state stationery of the Hussein regime in Saddam Hussein's own handwriting. Thursday night, Deutsche Welle, the German news agency, ran a piece on its American subsidiary, noting that the BFD, the German intelligence agency, had already seen the documents and had already informed the CIA that they were in fact forgeries. It is, after all, the German intelligence agency that the CIA turns to for handwriting analysis of Arabic and Farsi documents, in that the German intelligence experts are far better trained, of far better caliber than what the CIA has. When that was announced, the piece in question that had been run on Fox News, emanating from the White House, was not run a second time. Friday, yesterday, run on Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN. A piece claiming, wherein the White House claims in a statement issued yesterday that certain Iraqi nationals who had given information to the Bush-Cheney regime regarding Hussein's weapon of mass destruction program had recently been found to have been murdered in Iraq, supposedly by unnamed agents of the former Hussein regime who are still at large. I directly emailed the White House after seeing the piece, reminding the White House press office that this directly contradicts the June 13th last report from the White House and subsequent statements by Donald Rumsfeld, wherein the administration claimed that all Iraqi nationals who had provided such information to the United States had been evacuated to Iraq prior to the commencement of hostilities and were mostly in the United States under the protection of the U.S. government or were in allied powers in Western Europe also under protection. After I made that notification and notified the Associated Press, the piece in question was not run again.
Al, I want to take just a second here to remind all of our listeners that you can call us at 888-602-7500 or 7502, 7503, or 7504. We've got a couple of open lines. We've got a question for Al Martin. I hope you do give us a call, 888-602-7500. I know sometimes it's tough to call. Sometimes you just want to listen to Al and instead of ask questions. But, yeah, go ahead, Al.
Demonstrated that of the 43 principal reasons determined to commence hostilities against Iraq. The CIA had certified 39 of those reasons as being lies, whereupon pressure was exerted against Tenet to reissue the report, as a so-called interim report, when in fact it was supposed to be the final report. However, the Bush-Cheney regime cannot delay the release of the CIA's final report beyond this year's election, something that they had hoped to do. The report by law must be issued before the end of September 30 of this year. And the administration is frightened of that report because it very much mirrors the UN's final report of its weapon inspections upon the closing of UNSCOM and I-4, wherein the UN pretty well states the same, that the Reagan-Bush regime has lied principally on every reason in terms of supporting its allegations of military incursion into Iraq. This is a report that was already released last June, which the Bush-Cheney regime and Fox News and MSNBC, etc., desperately attempted to discredit by naturally saying, well, this is, of course, from the CIA, from the UN, and that, in fact, it was Kofi Annan's payback for the Bush 1 regime having lied to the United Nations originally about the status of Chief UN Weapon Inspector David Kaye, wherein the Bush 1 regime had certified to the United Nations that Kaye was, in fact, not a CIA agent and, in fact, was not passing along confidential UN information to the CIA. Of course, this was proven to be a lie in 1995 upon the final report of UNSCOM when the UN Weapon Inspector Turncoat Scott Ritter went public and outed David Kaye as a CIA agent and was able to prove that Kaye had passed along all confidential information garnered in the reports from the UN to the CIA, something that the Bush-Cheney regime has now acknowledged.
Well, it's we had a caller earlier today going on and on and on about the weapons of mass destruction and how they're there. They know they're there. Everybody knows they're there. And I don't know. How do you feel about it? Don't you think if the government, if this administration thought they had a chance in hell of finding these vast quantities of weapons, they would have left Kaye?
They would not have withdrawn the U.S. weapon inspection team 3 weeks ago. They knew 3 weeks ago that there was, I mean, they knew a long time ago that, in fact, the final UNSCOM report of 1995 indicated that when UNSCOM effectively went out of business in 1995, it had identified, destroyed, or otherwise confiscated all active munitions, non-conventional weapon systems and munitions then possessed by the Hussein regime. And since 1995, no such weapons have been found in Iraq, either by the UN or the U.S.'s own both Department of Defense and CIA inspection teams, or by the British Department of Defense inspection team. Over $300 million of American taxpayers' money has been spent on to maintain this lie that WMDs do in fact and did in fact exist in Iraq post-1995. I mean, let us all remember that the only nation that ever sold so-called turnkey non-conventional weapon systems to Iraq was the United States.
Right. A lot of people like to forget about that. They like to put that way back in their memory. Hey, Al, we're going to have to take a break right now, and I think we're ready over in the control room to take a break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Please stay tuned. Al, stay with us, and we're going to take some calls when we come back. You're listening to the Guy James Show on 1200 Power Talk 1200 here in beautiful Fort Myers, Florida. Thanks for being with us today. We'll be right back.
The Guy James Show.
His name was York. And when Lewis and Clark set out in 1804, he was a slave, William Clark's slave. But when he left so-called civilization, York became something altogether different. He became free. He became an elite hunter and explorer. He was revered by the Indians, and he was given the right to vote before most African Americans were given the right to speak. But York's bravest act came at trail's end when he demanded his freedom, because as Lewis and Clark returned to accolades, York returned to slavery. Some say York was eventually freed. Others say he went west, because what he found on the trail was a thing no man could ever give him. What can we learn from a 200-year-old story? Walk with Lewis and Clark at lewisandclark200.org and see what you discover, because their trail winds through us all.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ad Council.
To add a touch of elegance to your next get-together, consider setting out the champagne glasses, but filling them with flowers instead of wine. Put a glass at each place and fill it with one large blossom. Float a few more flower heads in small bowls on the tabletop for a dazzling effect. For a free brochure with more creative ideas about how to use flowers at your next party, visit www.flowerpossibilities.com.
1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222. If you think it might be poison, then the first thing you should do is call 1-800-222-1222.
For poison emergencies or just questions, the Poison Control Center hotline is here 24/7 with the expert help you need.
If you think it might be poison and you don't know what to do, call 1-800-222-1222.
A message from your Poison Control Center.
And now, back to the nation's number one Democratic talk show host, Guy James.
Guy James back with you. We're currently talking to got Al Martin on the line right now, and we're going to take a caller. We got George in Port Charlotte. George, welcome to the program. You have a question for Al?
Yeah, I understand they're pumping billions of barrels of oil in Iraq now. And who is selling it and who is buying it?
The American Viceroy to Iraq, Paul Bremer, I think that's the best way to put his title. It is his office that is responsible for refurbishing Iraqi oil production. His office still claims that Iraq is only producing a very small quantity of oil now, between 300,000 and 450,000 barrels a day, only about one-tenth of their actual potential production. As you know, Bremer's office, in concert with CENTCOM Command, has consistently said that Iraqi sabotage by so-called Fayyadin, Saddam loyalist, is responsible for problems, consistent problems, with Iraqi production, and that the facilities in and around the port of Basra have not been rebuilt yet to a sufficient extent to begin to export oil. Of course, what they aren't saying is that most of the oil exports, in fact, are moving through the northern pipeline through Turkey. And I can tell you that I could not determine where this oil is actually going or who is actually buying it. It is almost impossible to determine that once that oil enters Turkey. It obviously is going somewhere. What I can tell you, however, is that the United States Treasury has received not one penny of oil revenue from Iraq since the cessation of hostilities.
What does that mean? Is somebody stealing the oil?
Somebody is making off with this oil. I would tend to think.
I mean, who do they? Don't they have to write a check to somebody?
it is a modest quantity of oil. Admittedly, I would think when Bremer's office says that only 300,000 or 400,000 barrels a day are currently being produced, he's probably right. I would tend to think it's a modest quantity of oil.
Like a lot to me.
But nonetheless, we're still talking about tens of millions of dollars a day in oil production revenue that seems to be unaccounted for. The reason I think for the unaccountability is that Bremer's office still controls the flow and ultimate sale of the oil. Who is buying it beyond a few corporations, principally? Paul Bremer. And the General Accounting Office, it's interesting to note, the General Accounting Office had complained about the existence of this fund because the charter of the fund was such that Bremer did not have to submit any reports of monies flowing in or out of this fund to the United States General Accounting Office for review.
That sounds like stealing it to me.
Should this come as any surprise to you?
No, but, you know, who asked the question? You know, where's, I mean, this sounds like outright robbery.
The problem is, sir, that there's no pressure to investigate. Pro-Bushnet Media, which is now effectively all mainstream media in the United States, is not going to ask the question. How does the question, where does the pressure come from to ask the question, to investigate, if the American people have so little access to any real news?
Well, and Al, even though they would ask the question, and even so, this would be brought up and it'd be in the news for a day or so. You know, we have this recent episode with Halliburton, and that's not over with, by the way, with the Army Corps of Engineers about buying this fuel at the terrible prices.
And Halliburton still hasn't returned the $61.9 million.
No, they haven't. And here you go again. We've got this under investigation. What do? They give them another $2 billion contract,
which as you know, as of Thursday, is now under investigation. You see how quick the White House was to get Cheney out of the country on a so-called goodwill trip to Switzerland before the news of that was announced.
Yeah.
In other words, they could be selling it for 10 cents a barrel to Halliburton, who's selling it to Turkey, and no one would know.
Oil, international oil flows, sir, are very difficult to track. Because oil, it isn't a segregated commodity. A barrel of Iraqi oil then gets mixed with a barrel of somebody else's oil and a barrel of somebody else's oil beyond that. It isn't as if you can take a barrel of Iraqi oil and say this oil came from Iraq.
Really? I was not aware of that. I didn't know that the tracking was so... it was bulk track.
They don't know how much they pump out. I mean, if they're selling it, they have to know how much they pumped out, don't they? Don't they have a meter on it?
Oh, so I'm sure. Of course, there's meters on the wellheads, but actually, who is responsible for the maintenance of those wellheads and meters seems to always be in dispute. Bremer's office claims that he's not responsible. CENTCOM command claims that they're not responsible. The old round robin. When anyone actually asks a question on Iraqi oil production, which some European media outlets have, immediately statements are forthcoming from Bremer or CENTCOM command or someone else in now U.S.-occupied Iraq, stating that it is always somebody else's responsibility to keep track of it.
Well, it just round and round and round she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows. It's a... hey, George, we thank you very much for your call. We do appreciate it. We would like everybody to know that you can give us a call at 888-602-7500. That's 888-602-7500 or 7501, 7502, 7503, or 7504. Is that enough numbers for
I
you?
I think that's plenty of numbers.
Yeah,
yes,
it is. Al, this quagmire that we're into right now, I know you were involved in the military for a good many years. There's some question as to the morale. I see the suicide rate is way up with our troops over there and so forth. We had a mother of a soldier call in at the beginning of the show today that's heading over there. What about the morale? What's your take on the morale in a conflict like we got going on right now?
Morale is always a conflict for U.S. armed forces in that our armed forces have never really been trained, not very little money has ever been devoted to training U.S. military forces as forces of occupation. We have very few forces that actually specialize in occupying a nation wherein the psychological stresses are substantially different than that in combat. As a consequence, as you would expect, we have had a problem with suicide rates among members of the U.S. Armed Forces in Iraq. The Department of Defense, as I'm sure you're aware, has attempted to cover this up by originally claiming, when this issue first came to light in October, by which was approved, to prevent returning certain bodies of U.S. Armed Forces people killed in Iraq to the United States, and for permission under National Security Acts to list the cause of deaths of said service personnel as something other than what the actual cause of death was. Secondary problems that have now occurred among U.S. Armed Forces in Iraq is increasing narcotics use, increasing incidences and allegations of rape of Iraqi women, another problem that the Department of Defense has and has already paid out several million dollars, as a matter of fact, to settle said allegations. A third problem, the so-called killing of Iraqi civilians, the inadvertent killing of Iraqi civilians, which the Department of Defense still claims that only 94 innocent Iraqi citizens have been killed by U.S. Armed Forces thus far. Of course, as the General Accounting Office points out, that can't possibly be true, because the Department of Defense's reimbursement fund that it has been used to paying out claims by the relatives of said Iraqi victims has already paid out more than $150 million, and they're only paying out $5,000 a claim. So obviously there has been more than 94 so-called innocent civilian Iraqis killed by our forces.
Now we're going to take another call. We've got Eric in Sanibel Island. Eric, welcome to the program. You have a question for Al?
Well, yes, thank you. I'm sorry it's kind of off the Iraq subject, but I was interested. I'm not sure if your guest knows about this, but I was wondering about the ties that the Bush administration has with Eli Lilly and some of the other pharmaceutical people. I mean, it seems like there's two ex-executives in his cabinet or whatever, in his top people.
Well, Donald Rumsfeld being one.
Wow. Well, I was pursuing the vaccination thing. You know, I had a lawyer in Miami that was going to try to, they were trying to sue the pharmaceutical companies for damages for vaccines, and then when they did the Homeland Security deal, Dick Armey, I guess, stuck it into that thing at the last minute, and our suits were kind of null and void. I'm just kind of
you're talking about that. Yes, sir. What happened was is that in Dick Armey, who receives 93% of his political money from the pharmaceutical industry, by the way, Army attached a so-called shield of liability amendment when the creation of the Office of Homeland Security was approved vis-a-vis so-called vaccination lawsuits as it related to members of the armed forces.
It was retroactive, and people like me, just regular people, our lawsuits are just put on hold. But it seems like the Bush administration and the pharmaceutical industry, it just kind of makes you think that this, some of this conspiracy stuff is pretty, it doesn't seem, that far-fetched. Jeez.
Well, sir, you must remember that the Republican Party receives 83% of all of its money from five industrial sectors in this nation, the drug and pharmaceutical industry now being number one, having supplanted the long-held contender spot for number one, the defense industry.
Jeez. Well, that's depressing. Thank you very much for your information. I'll keep spreading it.
Thanks for your call, Eric. Thank you very much. We've got Martin in Detroit. Martin, welcome to the program. Do you have a question for Al Martin?
This is actually my first time calling in. I've been actively encouraged by Mike over the last few weeks to call in.
Well, I'm glad you did. We're really glad
you
did.
Thank you so much.
The more the merrier, and we're always glad to have participation in the show. That's what this program's all about.
Yeah. I wish I'd been able to hear more of this. I've been having some problems with the online streaming, so I've just been able to catch what I've heard over the last few minutes in this interview. I guess that if I had a question regarding Iraq, for example, it would probably be about the situation with the labor movement over there and what's been happening with U.S. troops, for example, either suppressing trade unions that are forming or failing to work with the unemployed organizations that have been developing in Iraq since the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. I have to admit, I'm kind of a little flummoxed here at the moment about everything. But I was just wondering if you might have a comment on what's been happening and kind of the situation with Washington and the Iraqi labor movement.
Yes, sir. You are referring to recent reports by the British Broadcasting Corporation and AFP, Argent France-Presse, the French state news agency, regarding U.S. military forces in Iraq suppressing, and I mean absolutely suppressing, the emergence of nascent Iraqi unions, the effort that the Bush administration has put forth to ensure that no union labor unions form in Iraq. There has been some press coverage, you must be aware of it, on this very issue. But overall in Iraq, the Bush regime, of course, the Bush-Cheney regime speaks with forked tongue. We claim to be, or the Bush-Cheney regime claims to be, the champion of capitalism, yet we are installing a socialist welfare model in the Western European mold in Iraq, gratis of the American taxpayers. We are providing universal health care to the Iraqi people, universal education. We are providing subsidies of electric, telephone, power, water, light. We are providing fuel subsidies. We are providing food subsidies. All at approximately $23 billion of cost to the American taxpayer. This cost will go on indefinitely. Therefore, to say that the Bush-Cheney regime is going to turn Iraq into some shining example of capitalism and free enterprise is not happening.
Right. Well, Al, that doesn't make sense. Sometimes you think about the conservatives here in this country howl and scream and you know, cry bloody murder over a little bit of welfare that we're doing here in this country, public assistance, and we're going to do it for Iraq.
I'm kind of thinking Chile and Pinochet here, but that's my take. Quick question, Al. You mentioned that when you said suppressing these labor movements, what have U.S. forces or British forces done in that suppression? I mean, I'm not real familiar with it myself.
They have broken up would-be labor meetings. They have arrested labor union leaders that are still alive that had existed in Iraq prior to 1969. Or prior to the CIA helped installation of the Hussein regime. They have committed all sorts of surveillance and sabotage to impede the formation of said, reformation. These groups existed once before in Iraq, but to impede the reformation of any labor movement in Iraq.
I'm assuming there was no labor movement all during the Hussein administration. Well, that's
Bush would love to do that here.
Oh yeah, yeah. I know. Well, you know, Henry Ford kind of helped out with that back
yeah.
in.
What was that, Pinkerton thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's an easy way to quell that. Martin, you got any more questions for Al Martin?
No, just a general statement that I appreciate his response. I'm glad that you know not only is he aware of it, but that he went ahead and made a statement on it. I'm glad he did. I've been following.
Yeah, speak up a little, Martin.
I was just saying, you know, I've been following the situation in Iraq with the labor movement since last April. There are actually a lot of very good websites in English that are out there with regular daily information on this, including on the situation with the unemployed and with the new unions developing. And I just appreciate the fact that Mr. Martin was able to provide a response to that.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Martin, and call back anytime. We appreciate your call.
Thank you, Martin.
Thank you.
You know, Al, that's something that I was unaware of as far as any labor union. You don't think of labor unions over in the Middle East.
Not really. But, you know, I guess that happened in Iran back in the 50s, and we took care of that. you know, with the institution of the Shah after our little agitation there. I really am concerned. I mean, it is mind-boggling to me that U.S. troops are being used to break up meetings for organizing labor. I mean, that's almost surrealistic in a way. I mean, maybe it isn't. Maybe I'm just being naive.
It is unlikely. Does the 18-year-old kid from Appalachia, now in the U.S. Army with an M16 in his hand in Iraq, know that these are would-be labor leaders or labor movement? Of course they don't know. They are just told that these people are a problem. They are seditious. They are treasonous. You hear the same language used in Iraq that has become so popular in this country now, since the installation of the Bush-Cheney regime, wherein suddenly such words as sedition and treason are being used to describe any who would criticize the Bush-Cheney regime.
Well, Al, just one more question here before we have to go. I want to ask you about this. I know it's something that you're informed about. The War College, the Army War College this past week, which I thought was an unlikely source for this, came out with their assessment of the Iraq War, and they had some pretty damaging things to say about the administration's war. A report published by the Army War College calls the Bush administration's war on terrorism unfocused and said the invasion was a strategic error. Is it common for the War College, the people at the War College, to come out and talk like this? Yeah, but won't heads roll over this when they do this?
That depends if the Bush-Cheney regime is actually reelected or otherwise reinstalled into power again at the end of this year, frankly.
Yeah, it just seemed I was really stunned when I read that coming out from the Army War College. I thought, you know, people would be worried about their careers, because we all know how vindictive this administration is. They've proven that over and over again, even trying to sicken the dogs on poor old Paul O'Neill this past week. They never denied anything, O'Neill said.
No, just slandered him,
yeah,
and his abilities.
Slandered him. All of a sudden, he was a no-good rat all of a sudden.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, that O'Neill, after his 60 Minutes interview Sunday night, did a follow-up interview on Good Morning America Monday morning, wherein he attempted to backpedal from some of the things he had said, particularly after he said that he was a rich old man and there was nothing the Bushonian cabal could do to him. That was obviously an unfortunate thing to say. But O'Neill, in an effort to be humorous, I don't know how many people really understood what he meant, said that after exposing the truth, some fiscal truths about Bushonian budget deficits, etc., that he had decided to give up one of his favorite pastimes, canoeing.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I believe I'd give that up, too, if I were him.
And flying.
Yeah.
Several other activities. Yeah.
Obviously referring to the fact that he didn't want to wind up being Colby-ized.
Yeah, Colby. Yeah, good way to put it. Al, I want to ask you one other thing. You know, we all hear rumors, and I've got my sources, and you've got yours. And there's a rumor's been floating around for a long time now, and you either have knowledge about this or have heard it, and you know anything about it or not. And I hope you don't mind me asking you right out here in public. But there's been a rumor floating around for a long time concerning the Treasury Department back when George Bush Sr. was the President of the United States, and Jr. was just kind of running around Washington, D.C., kind of willy-nilly having fun. You know what I'm talking about? About Mr. Junior George W. Bush Jr.
Not behaving in a
Christian married type way.
Oh, and causing a female Secretary of the Treasury to wind up with all sorts of tax problems.
Yeah, you know anything about that? You heard that rumor too, then?
Yeah, there's nothing new about that. I mean, the former Secretary of the Treasury in question. I mean, pretty well announced that, the tax evasion charges against her were manipulated. It was something that had been known previously, and that when she and George Jr. ended their illicit relationship, suddenly these charges were brought to the fore and were pushed with some head of steam.
Well, you know, we had heard that here at the show, and we always wonder. We'd sure like to go and interview a bunch of people at the Treasury Department and find out, what everybody knows. But I doubt that will ever be possible. But I just figured you might have heard that. Al, take a moment or two and tell us what you're up to right now in the way of commercial enterprise. I know you got your book going. I know you got your website. Tell us all about everything you want to tell us about. Subscription to your website, which is fascinating, by the way, and great reading, folks. Go ahead and tell us about it, Al.
Certainly, Guy. My website, almartinraw.com, is continuously expanded. It is a subscription website, $6.95 a month, which includes the monthly newsletter. Behind the scenes in the Beltway. My most recent book, The Conspirators, is now almost sold out of its third printing. I have a new tome penned, which will be released in March, entitled Bushonomics and the Coming Economic Collapse.
Very, very good. Well, you folks, you should take a trip to www.almartinraw.com. You're going to find interesting reading. You're going to find this man has a lot to say. As you know, if you've listened to this interview today, he's very well informed. He's, I might also mention, very good on the economy. The guy's a heck of an economist.
Not only my weekly political and economic articles, my weekly market summaries and reviews, but it contains a very extensive archives of every article that I've ever written, both for the website and both for the regular syndicated articles that I write for newspapers and magazines, as well as all of the back issues of the newsletter. The archives, it takes somebody a long time just to read all the archives.
Oh, you'll get your money's worth if you go to that. Al, we thank you so much being on the program today. We'll have you again back soon. Always a lot of interesting information. We're thankful and grateful to have you on the program today.
Guy, don't get your tie caught in the shredder.
All right.
Thanks, Al.
Thanks, Al.
Thanks, man.
That's a great story. I should have had him. I should have had him go ahead with that. He was telling me about one time when Jeb Bush was in his office, and Jeb wears these big long ties, and they were shredding some stuff, and Jeb got his tie caught in the shredder, and it yanked him right down to where his chin.
Really? When was this?
Back when they were working together. Back in I think I'm now. I might be wrong, but I believe it was between 88 and 92.
Okay, somewhere. Interesting.
But yeah, imagine that. Picture that, if you will.
I can only imagine. Yeah. I wish they got some video of it.
We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. We have a couple callers on the line. Hang on with us. We'll be back right after the news. We always stop for 5 minutes at the top of the hour and tell you what's going on in the world. And there's always a lot going on. Of course, you can find out a lot here.
Wonder if they'll talk about Scalia and Cheney's duck hunting trip.
You know, I hadn't heard that.
I haven't either.
You know, that's just out today on the L.A. Times. But, folks, if you want to be just absolutely sickened, read the story in the L.A. Times today about Dick Cheney and Anton Scalia going duck hunting together last week. And here's Scalia's about to rule on a case involving Cheney.
No collusion there, no.
If you and I, that's not going to happen to you or I or any normal person. It's just not going to happen. Well, you're listening to the Guy James Show on Power Talk 1200 WPTK Fort Myers, Florida. And we're going to be right back after the news. You're listening to the Guy James Show.
Restoring the liberal media. The Guy James Show. Coming up on the top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
A sprint to the Iowa caucuses. I'm Joan Bennett. Some impassioned pleas from the Democratic presidential hopefuls as the race tightens in Iowa.
We need your help at 6:30 on Monday. We need your help. Don't complain about George Bush if you don't go to caucus and support Howard Dean at 6:30 on Monday.
Howard Dean rallying the troops in Council Bluffs. ABC's Jim Hickey in Des Moines.
And we'll fix...
The truth. Guy James. News.
Oh, yeah. Back with you. Guy James here with you. Mike.
Wow.
Where's the time going? You know, we need about a 12-hour show on Saturday.
We really do, especially when you got Al on.
I've got a stack of stuff here 4 or 5 inches high that I wanted to get through today. I'm not going to get through 10% of it.
I know. This just isn't enough time.
It really isn't. But I tell you what we are what we are going to get through right now. We played a CD last week called Robin Bush and His Merry Band, and we heard a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
I got a lot of email about it, and it was a big hit. And made by a guy named Chuck Prentice, and Chuck lives over in Fort Lauderdale. And I believe Chuck is on the phone right now. Chuck, is that you?
Yes, hi.
Going to have to speak up, Chuck.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry. Yes, that's great. I'm glad to hear Robin Bush did so well. That's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. We had quite a feedback from that, and people loved it. And after you and I get done talking on phone, we're going to play another one of your selections. Where do you come up with the ideas for these, Chuck?
Well, you know, I was on conservative talk radio show for 2 hours this week, and he asked me what news program I watch. And I said, well, I always watch Fox News. He said, oh, you're a liberal, Chuck. How come you're not watching C-SPAN? I said, oh, I love to watch Fox News because every single night I get song ideas and titles from all the idiocy that you hear all day long.
Oh, good answer. Good answer. Yeah, that's right. Did you see the poll made a couple of months ago, Chuck, that the Fox News listeners were the most uninformed of any of the media?
Well,
misinformed.
That poll, misinformed. Right-wing talk host that I was on hit me with another poll. You know that in the state of Massachusetts, the Massachusetts Supreme Court said that gay marriage is a constitutional right. And the host gave me a poll which said that the people of the state constitution, by a vote of 69% to 31%, want to pass a constitutional amendment to outlaw gay marriage in that state. So I said, well, that's what my song, the one you have right now, that's what it's all about. I said to him, that's why the framers of this Constitution framed the Bill of Rights, because they knew it was always going to be 69 to 31% against any minority.
I see, yeah. Chuck, we thank you for calling. We're going to go to your song right now, if you don't mind. It's called Sex and Religion. And I think a lot of you are going to get a big kick out of this. Thanks so much, Chuck, and thanks for sending it, and keep bringing on this great entertainment. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Sex and religion, it's sex and religion, that old-time religion should pack up and leave. Sex and religion, give me sex and religion, the greatest combination since Adam and Eve. When Bill Clinton and Monica had their affair, sacred confessors popped out everywhere. They led our president through atonement prayers, and their prayers were answered. The White House is theirs. Sex and religion, it's sex and religion, that old-time religion should pack up and leave. Sex and religion, give me sex and religion, the greatest combination since Adam and Eve. What they did with a heterosexual affair yesterday, they're doing today by bashing the gays. Nothing rallies the faithful and frightens their wives like trashing gay clergy, gay schools, and gay lives. Sex and religion, it's sex and religion, that old-time religion should pack up and leave. Sex and religion, give me sex and religion, the greatest combination since Adam and Eve. Soon they'll control the courts and the red, white, and blue. The church will rule the state and they'll both control you. If you have the kind of sex life that they abhor, the church and the state will break down your door. Sex and religion, it's sex and religion, that old-time religion should pack up and leave. Sex and religion, give me
sex and religion, the greatest combination since Adam and Eve. Now that gay marriage is the new boy in town, they'll amend the Constitution just to keep you down. They say the gay lifestyle is perverted and odd. Well, they should know best. They're always talking to God. Sex and religion, it's sex and religion. That old-time religion should pack up and leave. Sex and religion, give me sex and religion. The greatest combination since Adam and Eve. If you want an abortion, the law will say no. Prayer will be back in schools. Sex education will go. Nothing raises money from the choir like sexual scares. That's why our Ayatollahs, the ultra-righteous, Bauer, Dobson, Falwell, Robertson, sanctimonious, Santorum, are all millionaires. Sex and religion, it's sex and religion. That old-time religion should pack up and leave. Sex and religion, give me sex and religion. The greatest combination since Adam and Eve.
Chuck Prentice bringing us another good comedy song there. We
I'm sure that's going to go over well with some listeners. Yeah.
Well, if Jerry Falwell, if you're listening, why call us and let us know what you think.
We know what he thinks. I mean, he said it every day on television.
Oh, do you really think
years?
You know what Mr. Falwell?
Well, actually, okay, yeah, that's true. That's true. He doesn't really say what he thinks, but
and Mr. Robertson as well.
Oh yeah, he's yeah. And those secular humanists.
What's the guy down in Louisiana?
Dobson.
No, he was the singer. You know, he was the evangelist. What's his name that got caught with the two prostitutes?
Oh, I. Swagger.
Jimmy, I have sinned. That was Jimmy Swagger. That was my best. Well, it sounded just like him. My studio audience didn't like my imitation, but that's a perfect Swagger.
I think it is.
It was.
Yeah,
hey, right now, do we have the orchestra ready? Do we have the orchestra crewed up? I think we do. We're going to have a few minutes of Republican Love, and it's going to be a very few because, Their letters weren't that great this week.
Really?
No, they were very boring, most of them.
Oh, jeez.
Called up and said, wrote, well, gee, I hate you and stuff like that. I mean, it wasn't...
Are they depressed over something, maybe? Or maybe they're getting kind of worn out?
I don't know. One guy sent me this big litany, and I'll just start out with it. It is the evil liberalism that sells out our military secrets to enemies and potential enemies for piddling campaign contribution. It is evil liberalism that hands over our most strategic waterway, the Panama Canal, to control of a country that has now allowed a potential enemy to build bases at both ends. I guess they forgot about the treaty we had over that whole thing, and we
another
had
one on the crack.
It is evil liberalism that takes people's rights to use their own land away because of some stupid rodent, fish, or insect. I guess this guy just doesn't like liberals at all. It is evil liberalism that scream out about the U.S. killing a few innocent people.
Huh?
I guess that... second letter... I don't have much to say about that first one. He just says we're evil, and we've heard that before.
Yeah.
That's kind of, you got to do better than
be
that.
Be more creative next
yeah.
time.
Yeah, and none of them were real creative this week. The second one, if it was up to you, dirty commie socialist left wing scabs. Now that's more like it.
That's me.
Have we been called scabs before?
Not scabs.
We would be speaking Russian by now. Boy, not me. I never could have learned it. I'd have had a problem. They would have conquered us, and you wimpy commie bastards wouldn't have lifted a finger or uttered a peep to stop them. Everybody knows that, and so do you. Well, I wasn't really aware of that.
I wasn't aware of that either.
Those of you who love this country hate you and everything you stand for, along with your Clinton family. They are the worst people ever to live in the White House. I hate them, and so does every right-thinking American who loves this country. He did filthy acts in the White House, and his old lady, didn't even care. In fact, after looking at that ugly wife and daughter of his, he probably couldn't help himself. And Hillary is probably the worst senator this nation has ever had to tolerate. She is mean and... talk about the pot calling the... She is mean and hates everyone who doesn't do what she thinks is right. If she ever became our president, I would move out of this country and fight against her.
Let's hope she wins.
Oh, yeah. Wonder where he'd move to.
Cuba.
Our next letter. Give it up. You guys are toast in the next election. Well, that's enough for me. Let's hang it up.
I give up. Bye. See
you. You don't have anybody who can come close to President Bush. He has saved us from the terrorists and made an economy that is very strong. People made fun of the fact that he was the first president with an MBA, but now it's paying off. Oh, it's paying off, all right.
Go to Walmart.
Yeah, it's paying off to the pharmaceutical industry, the oil, the insurance. It's paying off big time. I hope you can stand the stress of taking a huge beating in the next election because it's going to be terrible. Sorry, Charlie. Well, we'll be prepared for whatever happens. Next call. Now, this one was short. I think all of your callers are actors. Certainly, there can't be that many stupid people in America. Well, I admit, there's a couple of them that are, you know, I kind of wonder about.
Our conservative callers, sure.
Yeah, I wonder about them. And our last caller today, our last letter, rather. Every time you make fun of the fact that God chose George W. Bush as our leader, you are acting like an atheist. If you believe in God, you would believe in George W. Bush. Now, right there... Right there,
no
is, that's quite a statement right there. If you believe in God, you would believe in George W. Bush. Only a real fool could possibly deny that God is assisting President Bush in his decisions. You know, I thought about that, and I hate to say this, but if that last sentence is true, then I guess God isn't much in the way of an economist or a foreign policy expert.
No, and not omniscient or omnipotent either.
That's all we have this week for letters. We thank the orchestra for doing such a fine job, and always good to hear have a few minutes of Republican love. Right now, we got Bill in Fort Myers on the phone. Bill, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hi, and Mike, how are you?
Great.
Hello.
I want to mention Reverend Falwell, but before I get there, you know, we're getting ready to have the State of the Union, and the spending of the Bush administration is going to be compared to the Clinton administration. And I would like to get a little dialogue started, especially between Guy and some of the conservatives, of why the Democrats call a tax cut spending, which I agree with, but the Republicans refuse to call, even when the checks are mailed out from Washington, refuse to call a tax cut spending, and can we get a language together before the presidential debates begin?
Well, I think sooner or later, the Bush administration is going to have to understand that tax cuts, sooner or later we've got to have enough money to run a credible government. And evidently they haven't figured that out yet. And as Mr. O'Neill gave us a window into that particular thing last week, even George Bush himself,
Didn't we already give money to the rich people?
Yeah, that's the quote he said to them during those meetings. Didn't we already give money to the rich people? Now,
which he doesn't. I don't think he realized he's one of them.
That's a pretty startling statement, I think. I don't know.
Well, it's not much fun talking to me because I agree with you too much. But the conservatives do not consider a tax cut spending.
No, they don't.
The Bush administration is going to be able to say that they're holding the line on spending because they're not going to count those tax cuts.
Well, one of the problems they have is they're going to submit a huge budget coming up next week or the week after. I mean, huge.
You know what my prediction is? I predict that he's going to announce a national health care policy.
Oh, my God.
I swear he's going to do it. And what he's going to do is he's going to announce it. That's going to take a lot of steam out of some of the more Democratic candidates, because look, I'm doing it. That's what you wanted us to do. Then we're doing it. And then once the election's over, should he steal it again? Will probably say, well, you know what, we don't have the money for it, sorry.
I hope you're wrong about that, Mike, but I'm not going to say it now because I've seen so much. But quickly on Reverend Falwell, and out of respect to the church that he's going to visit here locally, I won't mention the name of the church, but I can't believe that people that actually believe in the Ten Commandments that very clearly say that it's a sin to give false witness, that they would have Jerry Falwell come and talk about, of all things, Christian values. That's ridiculous. being against Clinton, that's fine with me, but to represent a religious program and to tell lies, and when Bill Clinton, when we didn't know if he was going to survive impeachment, we didn't know if he was going to drown in the lake or not, and here comes Reverend Falwell with a pack of lies on a religious program called the Clinton Chronicles, and now that it's all over, of course he apologizes for it, but I don't believe his apology, and I don't believe the truth is in him.
Now that was about as low as a Christian man could get with those Clinton Chronicles. I know exactly what you're talking about.
One quick suggestion as I go: a lot of us don't have computers out here, and maybe we can help a little bit if we had an address. And on that, I'll go. And thank you so much for the program.
Okay, we'll try and get that for you coming up real quick. I'm going to have to get it out of my literature here. I always forget that address. I'll get it during the next break. Speaking of the budget, a lot of conservatives are upset with this guy right now. They are wild spending.
They're out of control spenders.
His priorities for the election year, physical priorities, they face a lot of problems in Congress. He's going to send lawmakers a $2.3 trillion, that's a T, trillion-dollar budget on February the 2nd, and congressional aides said that the blueprint would limit most federal programs to total growth of less than 4%, while, the deficit is expected to exceed $450 billion. Now, there's something to be very, very proud of.
Fiscally sound, huh?
Spokesman for the White House says, we recognize this will be a difficult year.
But we're going to Mars.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to do, and we're going to pour another $100 billion, however many dollars it takes, into Iraq.
What's that marriage thing, that $1.5 billion for solidifying or strengthening marriages or something? What the heck is that?
I think after what Al Martin told us about certain married persons, Mark, maybe you ought to, you know, that starts at home. I don't know.
Exactly.
Peace. I could be wrong on that.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Martin Luther King Day coming up on Monday, and that's something a lot of our listeners celebrate that day, a very important man in our history. I'm of that age that I was just coming of age during those turbulent times and remember so much of it, and a lot of you who are younger have seen documentation of what happened to Martin Luther King, but I don't think a lot of you who are very young, unless you're really a student of history, understand what the man went through. He had his warts and all, like every human being does, but the man went through some terrible times. And you talk about a guy having guts. He had more guts than any man that's lived in our time, knowing he was probably a marked man. Knowing when he gave that famous speech, I Have a Dream, that his days were probably numbered because he knew people were out to get him, and he'd had many, many death threats. And to go public as he did over and over and over again in so many locations and locales in this country, with so many people trying to lead the people to freedom and civil rights, he was a very, very courageous man, a very courageous man. And I think... if you don't know the history of Martin Luther King, honor his memory by learning what you can about it. There's a lot to learn, and if you don't go out and seek information about Martin Luther King and learn most of what there is to know about him, you will have missed out on one of the important episodes in our history.
Very true, very true.
So many great quotes from Martin Luther King. Just to give you true compassion. Is more than flinging a coin to a beggar.
Yes, it certainly is.
War is not the answer, Martin Luther King Jr. Let us not join those who shout war and through their misguided passions urge the United States to relinquish its participation in the United Nations. Oh, man, how prophetic that turned out to be.
It's amazing, isn't it?
In war, we are adding cynicism to death. For none of the things we claim to be fighting for are really involved.
Hmm.
A time comes when silence is betrayal. That's a very, very profound statement. Make a career of humanity. Commit yourselves to the noble struggle for human rights. I don't think anybody ever made a more noble struggle for human rights than he did. We've got great men like Desmond Tutu and other people around the world that have worked hard for civil rights and human rights.
Didn't when he went and was assassinated, wasn't he going there to help support a union strike?
In Memphis. You're exactly right. I believe it was the city workers, the garbage workers, and those folks.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. What a time that was. Many of you who are my age, those were tumultuous times. We weren't that far off from the assassination of President Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. Terrible time in our history. Terrible time. And I think by killing that man, they thought they might silence the movement, but they didn't. And it's a great thing that it wasn't silenced, and it will not be silenced. So do remember Martin Luther King on Monday. Take a moment wherever you are. If you're someplace where you can join a service or a celebration of his life, please do so. You know, I get to talking about Martin Luther. I get to talking about Martin Luther King. The man is... Well, he was so important to our history. I just don't think a lot of the younger people understand. And I'll say it again. I do hope everybody takes time to learn all they can. It was a very, very bad time in our history. Mike, you've got something you want to talk about over there, and I wish you would.
Yeah. You know, we had that earlier caller that was talking about weapons of mass destruction and reasons for invading Iraq. And some nice web person on Democratic Underground gave, I believe it's 10 lies that were told, and the answers to those lies leading up to the war and since then after the invasion. Lie number one, and this is President Bush. This is October 7th, 2002 in Cincinnati. This is a quote. The evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program. Iraq has attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes and other equipment needed for gas centrifuges, which are used to enrich uranium for nuclear weapons. That's President Bush. Fact. The story, and this is, remember, I'm basically quoting from Democratic Underground here, from a poster. This story, breathlessly leaked to and reported by Judith Miller in the New York Times, has turned out to be complete baloney. Department of Energy officials who monitor nuclear plants say the tubes cannot be used for enriching uranium. One intelligence analyst who was part of the tubes investigation angrily told the New Republic that, quote, you had senior American officials like Condoleezza Rice saying that the only use of this aluminum really is uranium centrifuges. She said that on television, and that's just a lie. It's a lie.
It's absolutely a lie. And, of course, she quoting Condoleezza, come out, we never dreamed they would use airplanes as a weapon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all a lie. Everything's a lie. And here's number two. This is my favorite one. Quote, and this is President Bush, January 28th, 2003, in the State of the Union address. Remember, because that was the big lead-up to the invasion, right?
I was there. Heard it with my own ears.
Wasn't it beautiful? Quote, the British government, good old Blair, has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa, unquote. That's President Bush. Fact, the swapper was based on a document that White House already knew to be a forgery thanks to the CIA. Sold to Italian intelligence by some hustler, the document carried the signature of an official who had been out of office for 10 years and referenced a constitution that was no longer in effect. The ex-ambassador who the CIA sent to check out the story, that was who had called into our show, by the way, ex-ambassador Wilson, quote, they knew the Niger story was a flat-out lie, he told the New Republic anonymously. They were unpersuasive about aluminum tubes and added this to make their case more strongly. It was a forgery. They lied. They knew it was a forgery.
And their answer was, well, perhaps it was a mistake that we included that in the speech. It wasn't the president's fault.
It was vetted by someone else. Blame someone else. All right, lie number three. Quote, and this is Cheney, who's my favorite guy in the world.
I love him.
We believe...
Love him like a brother.
We believe he has, in fact, reconstituted nuclear weapons. That's Dick Cheney on March 16th, 2003. Is that right after the invasion or just before? Was it March 20th?
Right before.
Yeah, okay.
Right
before. There's absolutely zero basis for this statement. CIA reports up through 2002 show no evidence of Iraqi nuclear weapons program. None. Zip. They've even said it now. They say it now. But they said it before.
With such authority.
Yeah, they say it with authority now. Well, you know, they don't. Okay, whatever. It just keeps going. Let's see. Let's just skip to some of the better ones. I don't want to take up too much time, but let's see. This is a good one. This is lie number five. This is a quote by President Bush, October 7th, I think 2002. Quote, "We've learned that Iraq has trained al-Qaeda members in bomb-making and poisons and deadly gases.
Ah.
Alliance with terrorists could allow the Iraqi regime to attack America without leaving any fingerprints," unquote. That's President Bush. The fact of this is that no evidence of this has ever been produced. Colin Powell told the UN this allegation, alleged training, took place in a camp in northern Iraq. Remember they showed some videos of a dog that was dying from some gas?
Yeah, we saw that puppy.
To his great embarrassment, the area he indicated was later revealed to be outside Iraq's control and patrolled by Allied warplanes. So basically we were protecting al-Qaeda camps, terrorist training camps. Good on us, huh? Yeah, good call.
You know, if you were to list all the lies, and I'm not talking about white lies that this administration...
These are flat-out lies. These are blatant lies.
If you started right now and talked nonstop, you would be done about a week from Thursday.
Exactly. And this is what, you know, when a caller calls up and makes these claims of al-Qaeda connections and the World Trade Center attacks connections and weapons of mass destruction claims, you know, you can't step back and just say, okay, hang on, let me go through the litany of lies, because it's too much. And if they haven't caught on by now, they're not going to catch on. They're either intentionally obtuse, in my opinion. They refuse to hear the truth.
Well, I think they're going to pay the price. I'm one that's optimistic about this whole thing. I really do think they're going to pay the price. And I know somebody else that thinks they're going to pay the price. We've got our New York Bureau on the phone
right now. We
got Jeff in New York. Jeff, welcome to the program. And we anxiously await your report this week from the New York Bureau.
Good afternoon, Guy.
Good afternoon.
Michael. You were talking about Martin Luther King, and I didn't think this particular show should go past without talking about what happened in Atlanta.
Oh, yes.
Where the resident invited himself to the King Memorial, basically forced himself upon Coretta Scott King, who was too gracious a lady to, you know, insult the office of the presidency, even though she didn't want, you know.
I wish she would have. Honestly.
There's a part of me that wanted me to slap him upside his head and said, get the out of here. I mean, if anyone... If Bush is not someone that Martin Luther King would have just sat down and bitch-slapped, I can't imagine who would.
Oh, you're going to catch hell for that.
You're right, though. You're absolutely right. Martin Luther King would have abhorred the policies.
Yes, he would have,
man.
And what happened there, even, I mean, the protests, which he actually had to hear. He heard the booing.
One of the first times they've been close enough, because they didn't stay in this First Amendment zone.
And look at the horrible symbolism of his people putting buses in front of these people.
No irony there,
putting
huh?
Buses in front of these people.
I was waiting for a water cannon to burst out there.
You know? If you saw some of those photographs and footage of these, you know, policemen with arms on top of the buses, you know, with these people down below, and of course one of the great signs was, "This is not a photo op."
Reminded me of Selma, Alabama, way back when.
And I'll tell you again, the cable media, of course. Forget about it. They didn't do it. CBS and ABC that I caught that night covered it beautifully. It was clearly anti-Bush. They pointed out photo op. They made it very clear that he was doing a flyby on his way to another $1 million, $2,000 a plate fundraiser. And they gave real time to the people that were protesting and why they were protesting and why it was so improper for this president to pay a drive-by phony tribute to Martin Luther King.
Yeah, but he got his trip paid for this way, didn't he?
Well, of course.
And then he appointed Pickering.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a slap in the face right there. A man who does not, who questions the idea of one man, one vote.
No, it's like, it's like you kind of want to go, is this what happens? You boo me? Go ahead and boo me. See what I'm going to do to you?
Pretty much.
Well, and their side is coming out and saying now, in defense of the Pickering thing, that the black people in Mississippi were all for Pickering being a judge. While it's true that there were a couple of high level people that worked for the government in Mississippi saying that, let me just tell you a quick statement here by the Congressional Black Caucus chairman, Elijah Cummings, on that misguided recess appointment of Pickering. He said, the president's actions are an affront to the memory of Dr. King. Clearly, protecting our civil rights and our civil liberties are not top priority for President Bush. The recess appointment of Charles Pickering is yet one more attempt by the Bush administration to turn back the clock on the rights and freedoms that countless Americans marched and died for over the last 40 years. You bet it was an insult and it was an affront.
And I sincerely hope that, like Mission Accomplished, the flight suit, like the phony turkey, this is one more photo op that is blowing up in his face. It's just...
We can only hope, and you know, this is something that the eventual Democratic candidate's going to have to jump all over. And if they don't jump all over it, they're making a huge mistake. I mean, they have to go and show mission accomplished. They have to go and show the cops standing over on tops of buses blocking off protesters in front of Martin Luther King's memorial. They have to show that.
And talk money, too. We paid to fly that piece of...
That practice has to stop on both sides, though. We need to come out and say our Democratic president that will be in office will not do that. We have to say that law must be changed. That
right.
cannot continue. It's how many hundreds of thousands of dollars to fly him around?
Well, and then they fly that big C-130 or whatever it is with the limo and
yeah.
the whole thing. I mean, it's a extraordinarily expensive trip.
Air Force One by itself is $57,000 an hour.
Exactly, and this is not right. It's just not right. It's you know, I'm not big into, you know, morality in that big M word, okay? But
well,
it's immoral. It's amoral.
I am.
It's unethical. It's aethical.
And you tell me how many hours of that trip were spent on Martin Luther King? It was like, what, 10 minutes?
No,
how much time did he spend with his $2,000 a plate, you know, pigeons?
Forgive me, but you can hear the conversation in the plane now. All right, Mr. President, we got to go over there and do that wreath thing over there at the Martin Luther King deal. Oh, yeah, damn, I forgot about that. Do we have to do that?
Do
yeah.
I have to hear him?
Yeah, Mr. President, you got to do it because then we'll have the whole trip paid for. Oh, man, I don't want to go over there. Come on. Come on, those darkies don't want me over there. You can just hear him saying that. You can hear him saying that. These people are insulting to black people. If you don't believe that, check out John Ashcroft. Check out Trent Lott. Check out all that. They don't mind saying things like that. They don't mind saying that at all. They're a immoral bunch, in my opinion.
Well,
yeah.
You'll get no argument from this part of New York.
That's what I could hear them saying. I would not say that, but that's what I hear them saying.
Well, and their appointments. And all their comments and the Trent Lotts and all of these people, there's that public comment that's usually, oh, I believe in the rights of everybody to have, you know, voting rights.
Oh,
but they get caught time and time and time again saying that they don't.
Over I think one of the greatest sins, too, again, related to this Martin Luther King thing and his presidency, you go back to Florida and those 60,000-plus disenfranchised voters.
Catherine Harris. You know, they purged voters.
They were predominantly African-American.
And Democratic.
Predominantly.
You know, Jeff, earlier in the program today, we had a gentleman by the name of C.J. Zaya from that's running against Catherine Harris.
I was listening.
And the numbers are looking pretty good for him. Looking pretty good.
He's got to hammer that home. And remember that Catherine Harris only won by less of a percentage in that gerrymandered district than Jeb did against a weaker candidate statewide. She only won by, I think, 10%, and he won by 12.
Yeah.
And that's in a 3-2 district.
You know, I'm holding you personally responsible for that.
You can ahead and do it. I'm not.
Well, I
that,
am. I don't care. Doggone it! You live in that district. You're going to have to bring that one home.
I don't want to.
I'm giving CJ your home number.
Don't do that.
I am.
Don't.
You're going to have to help out. Jeff, how's the weather in New York today?
Well, we're in double digits.
Oh, well, excellent.
Yesterday we had a -20 wind chill factor when I was going off to work.
That's always refreshing.
My hair hadn't quite dried and it froze before I got to the subway.
Nice.
Oh my.
New style.
Well, we hope you do keep warm in New York, and as always, you're probably going out on the town tonight.
Not tonight, but tomorrow I'm going to go see the final performance of Urinetown.
Is that right? The final one.
Final one.
My, oh my.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
And bravo for getting Mrs. Brown, our own Mary, on early this morning. I think anybody in D.C., check out that protest during the State of the Union address.
Yes, indeed.
Topped 500 dead today, and we can't forget it.
I'm going to be there to see that protest, and perhaps we get a chance, we'll go down and join in that. I would love to.
Yeah, you definitely ought to.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff, thanks so much for your call. We really appreciate it.
Always enjoy it, guy. Take care, Michael.
Thank you so much.
Our New York Bureau, Jeff, reporting, as always.
Beautiful as
ever. Wonder what's happened to our London Bureau lately.
I've heard that he's doing some undercover work in Central Europe, and he's deep undercover.
Oh, deep, okay.
And
deep,
we're getting back on.
All right. Well, very stealthy. Are we going to pause for a break right now? No, we are. Okay. I always have to look at our producer, and, I don't do anything without a producer. He's the man, and whatever he says, we do. You're listening to The Guy James, so give us a call. We got plenty of time to be heard yet. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. You know the game. Give us a call. Plenty of time to get your opinion and your viewpoint heard yet on here in The Guy James Show. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes.
A Democrat and proud of it. Guy James.
A character first moment, flexibility versus resistance. Flexibility is the willingness to change plans or ideas according to the direction of my authorities. With the rapid technological advancements of our day, it is a great intellectual challenge to simply keep up. The process of learning and relearning and going back to learn yet another tool, another method, or another technology requires intense mental discipline. This challenge, however, is not only intellectual, but also a character issue. It requires flexibility to keep fresh and willing to go on learning. It requires flexibility to anticipate the changes in technology and to take the initiative to learn them. Whatever changes you face, have an attitude to stretch yourself. Keep learning and improve your ability to succeed in our changing world. For information on building character in your organization, call 239-479-3700.
Nicole, your word is bicycle.
Bicycle. B-I-C-L-E.
Come on, Nicole. You're so stupid. I'm out of here.
We wouldn't see this had a spelling bee. Now, why do we see this with children's sports? We all need to take a time out. So please join us in supporting this important campaign to make sports safe and fun for all children.
This has been a public service message from Olympic champion Marion Jones for the National Alliance for Youth Sports.
You've heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Oh, gosh, back for the probably what's the final segment of the program today. I don't know where the time goes. It's a talk show, and we've been talking.
It's a talk show, and we had some callers that talked a lot.
Yeah, and very good callers they were at that. Somebody asked for the address a little earlier, and I've been remiss in passing this out. If you want to write to the Guy James Show and perhaps throw in a few shekels to help keep the program going, we'd appreciate it.
It's listener-supported.
It certainly is. No big-time sponsors here, no pharmaceutical corporations, no insurance
corporations.
I've been
talking to Eli Lilly, and they just keep up on me.
12870 Tradeway 4, P.O. Box 111, Bonita Springs, Florida. And that's 34135. Again, that's 12870 Tradeway 4, P.O. Box 111, Bonita Springs, Florida. 34135, and we hope you'll drop us a note and throw in a contribution. You can check out our website if you're here locally, www.theguyjamesshow.com, and you can email us at guyjames@theguyjamesshow.com.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can.
And if you guys, we've got a caller on the line. Let's get to right now. We got Gene and Benita. Gene, welcome to the program.
Hey guys, another great show.
Thank you, sir.
How you do it week after week? You and Michael are just nailing them. You got to have the righties out there squirming today.
Well, they've been kind of quiet today. We had one early, and I guess the rest of them figured out the score and figured out maybe not today.
Yeah, it's just a waste of time. Yeah.
After listening to Al Martin, they're probably a little bit intimidated.
Al is amazing. I mean, the guy's like an encyclopedia. He really is.
Absolutely. I've never seen so much information from a human type person.
Maybe he's not. I don't know.
Hey, a couple of things I want to mention real quick. I want to tell everybody that's listening out there, and I don't know how many there are. I know there's thousands worldwide on the Internet. I don't know how many thousands here in Southwest Florida, but everybody needs to know it's a listener-supported show. I don't know if you've told the folks yet that, Guy, but you know, log on to www.theguyjamesshow and send $5 or $10 or whatever you can afford, maybe once a month. There's a way to do it there. Just click on the PayPal thing. You put it on your credit card. I think that's we need to keep this thing going in Southwest Florida. We're in our second year. When I say us, we Democrats are in our second year hearing some darn good liberal talk radio. And we thank you, Guy, you and Michael, and everybody else involved with your show for keeping it going. Second thing I want to mention real quick is this Monday night at 6 o'clock at Lakewood Country Club in Naples, the Collier County Democratic Club gets together for its monthly meeting, and working on our big gala, which is...
Can you speak up just a little, Gene?
Yeah.
Thank you.
We're working on our big gala that comes up in March, a big fundraiser for the Collier County Democrat Party. We've got the Honorable Senator George McGovern is going to be with us that night to speak. We got some other surprise guests going to be there. It's going to be a fabulous night. That's in March. But for you Democrats that want to get involved, want to put a Democrat back in the White House, and you live in the Collier County area, come on out to Lakewood Country Club this Monday night for our monthly meetings. They're a lot of fun. There's free refreshments, a lot of good information, a lot of good camaraderie. Usually over 100 people in attendance at all these club meetings. Come on out and join us. It'll be great fun. If you need some more information, you can call 405-0355. And not only here, but in every community. I don't care if you're in Des Moines, Iowa, or Sacramento, California, or wherever you're hearing the Guy James Show. Tonight, when you get off the show and when you're through listening, find out where your local club is. Get involved in the Democrat Party. Let's put a Democrat back in the White House where they belong. Guy, keep up the good work. You and Michael, great job.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Gene. And you know, all of our listeners would be well to remember that. Get involved. The DNC is not going to elect the next president. The state party is not going to elect the next president. We here in the grassroots on the local level, if we don't do it, it's not going to get done. So join up, get involved, get active, and, you know, we had a little dial tone there.
I guess so, yes.
Right in the middle of a rant.
Exactly.
I was wanting to get
right back up.
But do get involved, and we're not going to win this unless you do get involved. And I don't mean get involved by just, you know, passively. I mean actively get involved in this campaign. It's going to be the damnedest presidential campaign there ever was, I promise you. You're going to see a bare knuckles fight coming from the Republicans. They're already taking the gloves off. If you don't believe that, how many of you saw the attempted political assassination of Wesley Clark this past week? Nice try, guys. Talk about here's something they don't want to admit, but it's oh so true. They won't admit that the White House or whoever puts out the talking points each week. They just won't admit that. But here we have at the same hour on the same day, we have what's his name, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, Ed, I can't think of his last name. That's how nondescript he is. But anyway, he's the chairman of the RNC. We've got Drudge, we've got Hannity, and we've got the big mouth drug junkie himself, Rush Limbaugh, all literally at the same time. The RNC, Ed Gillespie, the chairman, he's out in Arkansas giving a speech, and at the same moment, we've got Drudge and we've got Big Mouth Drug Junkie, Limbaugh,
yes,
saying that they've got this proof that Wesley Clark was all for the war, and he testified in front of the House Senate subcommittee. It just wasn't true.
No, they lie.
They lifted a bunch of things out of context and promoted them to be the absolute truth, and they could not have been farther off the mark. They are scared of Wesley Clark. There is no doubt about it. You know, they're saying, we want Dean, we want Dean. I think they can whip Dean. I don't know if they can or not. I don't know. But something tells me that they are scared of Wesley Clark.
They're scared of the truth in general. One more lie. Can I give you one more lie?
Oh, yeah. Tell me one more. I always like to hear them again.
This is from Democratic Underground. One of the posters. Lie number 10, quote from President Bush when he was in Poland back in June 1st of 2003. Yes, we found a biological laboratory in Iraq which the UN prohibited. President Bush in Poland. This was the reference to the discovery of the two modified truck trailers that the CIA claimed were were potential mobile biological weapons labs. But British and American experts, including the State Department's intelligence wing and a report released this week that would have been back in June or July, have since declared this to be untrue. According to the British, and much to Prime Minister Tony Blair's embarrassment, the trailers are actually exactly what Iraq said they were, facilities to fill weather balloons, basically for artillery spotting. They're liars.
But we at the White House cannot.
They're liars.
We at the White House cannot take responsibility
they
for that.
They make statements that are said with absolute confidence.
No, that's George.
Yes.
That's George.
He's a liar.
Tenet's, that's George.
He's a liar.
Tenet's fault.
He's a liar.
Oh no, George Tenet.
Tenet should be irritated beyond belief. Actually,
he'll take the fall for it though.
But
you ask.
What did Wilson call him? A potted plant.
Yeah. Well, Wilson had it right, and Ray McGovern had it right. He had to. Talking about CIA. Very briefly, I was going to give out this long rant this week and my opinion of what's going on in the Republican Party right now. And this is why I think we got them. And I really do think we have them. Outside of another 9/11 happening and Bush's ratings shooting through the roof for God only knows what reason.
Don't be surprised if it does.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised. But I believe after a lot of study and a lot of thought that there's four kinds of Republicans. And I've narrowed it down to this, and I'm going to be brief about it and just kind of give an outline. Of course, we got the neocons, who are the warmongering, aggressive type, who are more than willing to get involved in any conflict there is around the world that they perceive might.
They're the very bad.
Might be a threat. And evidently they got psychic powers because they know who might be a threat someday. Hell, with that kind of thinking, we might as well take over Great Britain and Canada right now, because if you think ahead... someday natural resources are going to get scarce, and we're all going to be wanting them, and they might want them too, so we might as well take them out.
North Sea oil and timber.
They might be a problem. Then we got the paleoconservatives who believe in an isolationist policy and an aggressive foreign policy as well, getting into any war that may be necessary, but a domestic policy that would take us back to the Stone Age.
Good stuff.
Those are the paleos. And then there's the Christian right. These guys scare me. Yeah, it's not that they're Christian, because I'm a Christian too, but it's because they believe in the Middle East policy, which will lead to Armageddon. And don't think I'm kidding about this, because I'm not.
They want to bring it on.
They want it leading to Armageddon and bring on the return of Christ. Truly, that's what they want. Now, actually, I'm not in a real hurry for that to happen. I'd be happy to wait a while, thank you. But Tom DeLay... is in this category, along with Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and our good friend John Crisco, Oil Ashcroft.
It's called Christian Reconstructionism or Millennialism.
That's exactly what it is. And then we have these Republicans who are centrist. They're almost extinct.
They're being purged.
These are the guys, I would say, back to the Nelson Rockefeller, the centrist Republicans. They're nearly extinct, and because of that, I really believe that the Democrats will take over the government again. Why? Really because the Republicans have abandoned the middle ground. They've given up the middle ground. They're extremists. And the middle ground is always where it's at in an election. That's where the battle's got to be fought. That's where it's got to be won. And I believe the Republicans in this administration have pushed their party too far to the right, leaving the middle wide open for the Democrats. And the middle ground wins the election, and it's the middle ground is usually right. And that's where most Americans are. That's most where most Americans want to be. Most Americans don't believe we should invade every country we think might be trouble down the road. Invading countries and trying to make them like us really isn't something that's working very well. And most intelligent Americans realize that fact. So where's George Bush in all of this, you ask? You did ask, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I thought so. He promised us to be a leader who would stay out of other countries' affairs. He promised his administration would be humble and take care of our own people. Yeah, right, humble. Instead of getting involved in foreign quagmires like this present deal in Iraq.
No nation building.
He went hunting for it. Yeah, no nation building. Can somebody please tell me why the American press hasn't pointed out the huge difference between his father's administration and his. His father's administration, for the most part, they were reasonable people. I didn't like everything that went on, but the most part, they were reasonable. And he was able to build a large coalition for the first war. This guy didn't raise Jack in the way of a coalition when it comes. Georgie's been a puppet for the neocons like Cheney and Wolfowitz. There's no doubt he's been a puppet, and whenever the neocons want to invade another country for whatever reason, Georgie's all ears. There's no question. He believes God chose him to lead the country at this time.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So we know for sure he's definitely not a centrist conservative. And I really don't think Junior Bush knows what he is for sure. I think he's, like I said, he is a puppet. He's probably never thought about very much, and it's, well, it's obvious that he hasn't thought about anything very much. You heard O'Neill's testimony there, or his saying, well, he was just totally, you know, mm-hmm. unattached. He didn't know what the hell was going on in the meetings.
No. Just a blank slate.
So, you know, really, whose puppet is he? Is he Wolfowitz and Cheney's, or is he Tom DeLay's and Jerry Falwell's?
A little both.
I think you're right. And sooner or later, I really believe the Americans are going to wake up to what's been going on. They're going to realize that Bill Clinton's administration, despite his little deal there that none of us like, by the way. If you Republicans like throwing that at my face, don't bother. I was just as ashamed of it as anybody else.
Oh, the children.
But
the
wasn't ready to put him to the guillotine for it like some of you were. Sooner or later, the Americans are going to wake up from their slumber and realize that Clinton's administration was one of the best in our history. We had no real domestic problems, no huge $500 billion deficits. Imagine that, $500 billion. No big wars, just peace and prosperity for 8 years.
And who wants that?
That's all we had. That's all they did. And why? Because Bill Clinton governed from smack dab in the middle where most thinking Americans want to be. And if you doubt his abilities as president in foreign policy, you remember when we went into Serbia and the UN we had no UN permission?
Yes, that was NATO.
No
yes.
one in the world community was upset at all.
No, you didn't there were hear no protests anything. In Rome.
Why? No. Because of diplomacy, mm-hmm. superb diplomacy setting that whole thing up. Mm-hmm. Real Republicans don't want big deficits. They've preached against them for years. What does Junior Bush do? He gets the largest deficit in history. Then he introduces massive tax cuts for the wealthy. And he'd really have another huge cut if he thought he could get away with it. He absolutely will. So I think the centrist Republicans are going away from this administration. I think if we run the right candidate, I believe that we can swing a lot of these people over. I think this guy's got a problem. Forget all the lies about the war. Forget the fact that he's pissed off nearly the entire world community in the foreign policy area. Forget the unemployment figures and the tax cuts and all. I think they've abandoned the middle, and I think that's going to cost them, and it's going to cost them dearly.
They're eating the middle.
Well, we've come to the end of another program, and we certainly do appreciate having you folks with us today. We always appreciate all you folks on the Internet. I know there's so many of you out there and our local callers as well. Don't forget to visit our website, www.theguyjamesshow.com. And thanks so much for listening. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Guy James Show is the cooperative effort of a talented and dedicated staff. Executive producer, Gene Charles. Research director, Michael Merrick. Production manager, Frank Princeton. Program coordinator, Martha Simon. We thank the staff for their continued dedication, and we thank you, the listeners, for your interest in our show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. This has been The Guy James Show.